it's a recording now. It's moving.
You pause it.
You continue here.
I think we are going to start. We are just about to start our meeting. Looking into the time, we are already 15 minutes behind. And my worry is that we are going to have two presentations. That is higher education and basic education. And personally, I feel that the time that we have allocated for our presentation today is very little. So I'm going to request members and our department to try and give us more information. We should interact as we are aware that education has been identified as a key priority, and as we are aware that there are so many challenges from education side. So I expect that we are going to apply our mind, do justice to our presentation, as all of us, we know that the future of this country lies on education. On that note, members and our department, without wasting our time, as I've already indicated that we are 15 minutes late, I'm going to start requesting members and everybody who's in this meeting to introduce his or herself. I'm going to start introducing myself. I'm Wendy Makhadi, the chairperson of this committee, the Select Committee on Education and Recreation. I'm going to request members to introduce themselves. Thank you. Over to you, members.
I'm the first lady member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Willem Faber. I represent the Northern Cape, and I'm also a member of the Select Committee.
Good morning. My name is Michael Avalius. I'm from the Western Cape. I'm also a member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Sipho Plaki, a member of this committee.
Good morning. I'm J.J. Gunda. I'm from the Northern Cape. I'm also a member of this committee.
Good morning. I'm Zukiswa Rantho, a member of this committee from Eastern Cape.
Good morning. I'm Charles Mashamaite, a member of this committee from Limpopo.
Good morning, my name is Pinky Ngobe. I'm a member of this committee representing Gauteng and the NCOP.
Good morning, my name is Peggy Maso. I'm acting DDG for FET Colleges in the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Good morning, everybody. Jens Tredu, CFO, Higher Education and Training.
Mary Metcalf, DG Higher Education and Training.
To all other members who are here,
I'm Zakele Semwana from the Office of the DG Higher Education and Training.
Everybody who's here, I've indicated that, you know, we are going to introduce ourselves. I want to know who's in this meeting. And please, as I've indicated, you know, time is money. Can you please introduce yourself?
Apologies, Chair. I'm Andy Kizredis from PNG.
I'm
Christopher Scholes from Chevrolet Online.
Zuranda Sanga, secretary to the committee.
Thank you, everybody. I'm just going to get
this opportunity to the department to give us a briefing, to lead us on the briefing. Over to the department.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We are very much looking forward to this presentation. In the time that I've been with the department, I think this is the first time we've had an opportunity to engage this committee, and we're very glad of that, and we look forward to further engagement. We're also looking forward to the budget vote tomorrow. I think that it's good that we've been invited to make the presentation. The minister is going to be presented tomorrow, and hopefully we'll be able to engage more with the committee in form of again. Just to introduce
that, DJ, I must just indicate that since the inception of this, the fourth parliament, we have never had an opportunity of interacting with the minister. You know, I think that it's really a worrying factor, and I think we'll convey that to the minister.
Okay. Thanks. I will. The two officials that I've brought with me are two very important members of our team, but I've had to bring apologies from some of the leadership. As members will be aware, this is a new department, and we have only one permanently appointed Deputy Director General, and that's Mr. Faraz Patel, who's responsible for policy planning, human resource development. Mr. Trudeau is our CFO. He's officially appointed in the department. And Mr. Dr. Becky Mfuba is acting in the position of Deputy Director General for Vocational and Continuing Education. I'm very glad that they've both been able to join me, and they'll assist in the presentation. Chairperson, before I start with the presentation, I thought it might be useful to just give an indication of why our interaction with you is going to be so important. The budget speech that the Minister will present will get a sense of the entire work of the department. The budget that we're going to present to you today in detail will also give you a sense of the entire work of the department. But there are particular aspects of our work that have a critical relationship with provinces. And you will be interested to know that the Minister has convened the Council of Education Ministers for Higher Education and Training. So we're working formally with the provinces through the Council of Education Ministers. I hope very much, Chairperson, that everyone has a copy of our STRAC plan. We asked for it to be distributed to all of the members. And I thought it might be useful to just, if people have it with them, if they don't, of course, that's fine, but to look at the legislative mandate, because that will give you a sense of where there's laws that cover the kind of concurrent responsibilities of the minister and the provincial governments. If people have that in front of them, it's on page 36 and 37. Now, this is the legislation that previously resided in the Department of Education and in the Department of Labor. Members who've been working in the area of education will recognize much of the education legislation. Members who haven't historically worked in the area of skills may find that there's legislation that they're not familiar with. Of the acts that are listed as those being assigned from the President, by the President to the Minister of Higher Education and Training, there's two acts that are of particular relevance to this committee. The first one is the Adult Basic Education Act, the ABET Act. Now, that provides for the establishment of public and private adult education centres and for the governance of those public adult education centres. That entire act was allocated to the Minister of Higher Education and Training. Previously, it would have been with the Minister of Education. What's important about that act is that if we study it, we'll see that there's some responsibilities that are given to national and some responsibilities that are given to provincial. And the same applies to the FET Act, which was passed in the House several years ago. The FET Act provides for governance and funding of FET colleges, and that act is currently administered in the main by provincial MECs.
Members, do you have the threat for higher education?
Yes.
Do you all have?
No. No, I didn't check my pigeonhole. I think mine is in the pigeonhole. If you just distribute it.
Thank you, Chairperson. We may, for members who don't have it, we'll read as with an understanding that you don't. But basically, I think that this committee needs to know that in terms of a concurrent responsibilities, it's fundamentally in terms of adult education and FET, where provinces have particular responsibilities in concurrence with a national department. Chairperson, most of the other acts are national acts. They've always been at a national level. I think it's important for the committee to understand them and for us to work with you in deepening that understanding and how it fits into the entire system. But the two acts which have particular relevance to provinces are ABET and FET. Chairperson, if we can now move to the presentation. What we are going to do in the presentation is just give a background in terms of the establishment of this new department and the budget that we have. Mr. Trudeau is going to present on the NTF allocations for 2010, and then Dr. Mokhlobo and myself will present on the departmental programs and objectives. I'll cover for the acting DDGs who are not here. So if we move to slide 4, everybody will know that the Department of Higher Education and Training was established in May. The President first of all announced his intention and appointed ministers, and then in May he actually proclaimed the new department. After the proclamation of the department, the President then assigned the legislation, and it's when we have the legislation that the intentions of the President are made absolutely explicit, and it's the basis on which we then start establishing the department. There was a difference in the time frame in terms of when the acts were assigned. So the responsibility for laws that came from that were previously administered by the Minister of Education were allocated to our minister in July of 2009. But the legislation that has been assigned to the minister from that was previously in the Department of Labour only came in November. This committee will be struggling with some of the complications of this for a while, because the annual report that you will review for 2009-2010 will be presented by the Department of Education. Until the 31st of March, the Department of Education still existed, still ran the budget, still employed the staff. So as the DG for Higher Education and Training, there were no staff members assigned to higher education from either education or from labour until the 1st of April. There were one or two people that we seconded and some people in my office. So from the 1st of April we now have budget and we now have staff. The broad mandate of the department is to develop and support a quality post-school education and training education sector, and to promote access to higher and vocational education and skills development training opportunities. Chairperson, that's a very high-level statement, and it contains a huge amount of detail, which we'll get into in terms of the presentation. How the budget has been developed is that once we had the legislation, we then had to identify which functions were needed from the Department of Education to fulfill the legislation, and we had to identify what functions in the Department of Labour were necessary for us to fulfill that legislation. Once we had identified the functions, we then had to work through which are the posts that are necessary to fulfill that function, and it has been a very complicated process, as you can imagine. With the budget that has been received from the ex-Department of Education, we had a very high level of a consensus around that budget. Mr. Trudeau will give more details about that, but we reached an agreement between the two departments as to how the budget should be split, and that was based on function. In terms of the transfer of function from the Department of Labor, that was much harder to achieve, and in the end Treasury did the split, and we still think that it may be inaccurate and we may be bringing adjustment estimates. Chairperson, if you're going to allow, I'd like to hand over to Mr. Trudeau to take you through slides 6 to 10, but I'm also going to ask your permission to leave the room and take a call. I've got 2 calls from Presidency, 1 from the Minister's office, so there must be a crisis. I'll be back in 2 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going over to slide number 6. We start off by just indicating to the committee the allocations that the department received from National Treasury. And just to refer back to what the DG was indicating is that the allocations that we received were based basically on the amounts that were split from the old Department of Education between higher education and training and basic education. That split was based on specific functionalities. For example, if we take, for instance, teacher training, in terms of teacher training, there was an exercise in the department to determine which percentage of that function belongs to higher education, which percentage belonged to basic education, and accordingly the budget was split. That exercise was performed for each and every function within the department. Some of the functions were obviously intact, such as the branch higher education, which addresses universities and universities of technology. That obviously, as such, just shifted to the Department of Higher Education and Training. And some of those, such as the NSMP and HIV/AIDS conditional grants, which are purely basic education functions, obviously just moved to the Department of Basic Education. We then had, as indicated on slide number 6, the baseline allocation to the department over the 3 years of the MTEF. Now, one can call it a constructed baseline, because this is the baseline based on the shift of functions, based on this ratio between higher and basic, and those were the numbers that we came up with, which Treasury agreed with. Then we received some additions to the baseline. Those are additional allocations, specifically for the Department of Higher Education and Training, including there, as you can see, for higher education subsidies in the second and third year, for the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, that is the student loans inflation adjustment in the third year. The newly established department, we received some funds there, although very limited based on what we actually require. Those funds are specifically for the establishment of the new ministry and the new office of the Director General. But for normal operational activities, we did not receive any funds. The agreement with Treasury, and that has been the agreement with all departments during this restructuring process, is that departments must still continue funding and functioning within their normal baseline allocations. Now, it is a difficulty for the department, and we will show you later on also why we say so. We also received some adjustments for the compensation of employees, which is just the normal salary increases. Then the two important ones for the further education and training sector, the shifting of the funding of that sector from the provincial share of government, where we have now a conditional grant. Those are the three amounts that's reflected there, the 3.3 billion going up to the 3.7 billion in the third year. And then also for the FET sector, the conditions of service improvements over the MTF period. Now, those amounts, the 400, 430 and 450 are still under negotiations within the bargaining chambers, but the money has been allocated. Those are the limitations. We then, Chairperson, have an adjustment to baseline. That is then the funds that were shifted by Treasury from the Department of Labor. That is why it's not part of the baseline allocation as we had it on top. But as the DG explained, these were funds the Treasury identified, and therefore it's reflected as an adjustment to the baseline. Chairperson, I think that's enough for that page, just to reflect in that the total allocations that we have as department over the MTF period start from 32.1 billion growing to 37.4 billion. The majority of funding, obviously, for the university sector. On slide number 7, just to give you an indication of where all the money is going, 32.1 billion may sound a lot, but we must take into account, first of all, that 8.4 billion of that is actually direct charges against the National Revenue Fund. So those are monies that we receive directly from SARS and that's paid over immediately. The department merely acts as a post office. So it's not really money that we do anything with physically. It's money that's going to the CETAs for their funding, as well as a portion thereof to the National Skills Fund. That leaves a balance of our voted funds of 23.7 billion. Now, that 23.7 billion, of that, the majority goes into transfers. First of all, to universities, 17.5 billion. A further 51 billion as a contribution by the National Exchequer for the National Skills Fund. We have our contributions to the public entities, the 1.986 billion. Now, that is for the three public entities, excluding the CETAs that we have, which is the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. They receive the majority of that amount. Then also the Council for Higher Education, and SAQUA is the third public entity that the department has. The FET conditional grant also, that goes to provinces, the 3.7 billion, and then other small transfers, such as the department's own contribution to CETA funding, as legally required, total of 569,000. Then we have our compensation of employees, which is the funding of all the personnel, which is 228 million, which leaves us with a balance of only 163 million. Now that 163 million must fund all our operations and all the projects that the department has. In fact, of that, only about 10 million rand can go into project funding, as the rest of the money is used for normal operations. On slide 8 and 9, Chairperson, just slide 8 is just an indication of the allocations eventually per program. And please note that we work here without the direct charges to the CETAs and NSF. We only work on the 23.7 billion because that is the actual amount that we can work with in the department. Just to indicate you the total allocations per program. The biggest, obviously, university education with the subsidies to universities, and then also a program for vocational and continuing education and training, that is where the conditional grant for the FET colleges is situated. On page number 9, slide 9, perhaps just more detail on the total transfers, just to give more clarity on that, and I think specifically transfers to public entities, just to show there the breakdown of the 1.9 billion that I referred to previously. The National Student Financial Aid Scheme, as you can see, 1909 billion going to the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. That grows to 2.431 billion in the third year, and then minor allocations to CHE and SAQUA. Some of the other transfers, I mentioned to you the CETA function. Then we also have the India-Brazil South Africa Trilateral Commission. We refer to the National Skills Fund, the Exchequer contribution there, and the FET conditional grant. We have one earmarked allocation from Treasury Chairperson, that is for our office accommodation. Now, those allocations are normally earmarked by National Treasury. That is for the lease agreements in the offices that we accommodate in Pretoria. So I'm going to hand back to the DG to continue from slide number 11.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, the current structure of the department and its five budget programs are given on page 11.
The complexity of establishing a new department is that in the first instance we've simply replicated on the main the organizational structure of the Department of Education that's relevant to us, as well as the section of the Department of Labor that's come across. We indicate in our strat plan that now that the strat plan has been approved, we are moving in terms of the requirements of the public service processes to review our organizational structure. For those who want to look at the strat plan at some point, it's on page 112. The requirements of Chapter 1, Part B of the Public Service require that once we have a strat plan, we have to determine the organizational structure to achieve the strat plan and define the posts that are necessary. So we've begun that process, and there may be changes in the organizational structure and therefore to the program structure and the budget at some point, but obviously after the end of this financial year. So we have a program on administration, which is corporate services, including personnel, including logistics, including GITO, and including a function such as legal services, which currently is located in human resource development. And we also have finance as a separate, under the separate leadership of the CFO, Mr. Trudeau. Chairperson, I just want to indicate that we've been joined by the Minister's advisor, Mr. Gwebs Konde, and we'll convey through him the message to the Minister. The four substantive departments that carry the policy work, obviously the Human Resource Development Planning and Monitoring Coordination branch, then we have a branch on university education, then we have the branch on vocational and continuing education and training, which includes adult education and training, and a branch on skills development. The detail of that will be covered when we get to those budgets. The first one that we're going to look at is administration. This includes, of course, the costs of the Minister's office, management, corporate services, and office accommodation. One of the things that's interesting about establishing a budget for the new department is that you have to calculate what your antecedent budget years would have been had you existed. So we hope we've done that accurately with the help of Treasury. But the budget for the program we're estimating is going to be increasing at an annual average rate of 4% over the MTF period. So from 103 million in this year to the amount of 115.7 million in 2012. Most of that is just related to inflation adjustments, as well as some allocations for computer services for the department and having a well-functioning IT section. And then the program two, the total allocation to the department is 26 million. As indicated by Mr. Trudeau, that includes salaries. Now, the functions of that branch is that there's at the moment five key functions. The first is the human resource development function, and I need to take a few minutes, if you'll allow, for me to explain this. The history in the country of HRD planning has had a varied trajectory, and it's been given new impetus by the leadership of the Deputy President in establishing the Human Resource Development South Africa Council, which is a critical council. It's one of the three councils chaired by the Deputy President. The Deputy President also chairs the AIDS Council, and he also chairs the BEE Council, and now this council has been established. And what's important about it is it looks at human resource development from a multi-department perspective, that human having the people to meet the needs and to develop the potential of our people requires working relationships between all departments, but in particular basic education in terms of the quality of work that emerges from there, science and technology in terms of science, innovation, technology, our department in terms of skills development, and the Department of Labor in terms of labor employment policies. So the council brings together all of the key ministries, all the ministers are a member of that council, and in addition it brings together the key stakeholders from business, labour, and a variety of expertise. So the department offers a secretariat and runs the HRD, which is a council, which is chaired by the president. This is the section of the department which is also at a systemic level looking at planning and information, monitoring and evaluation. International relations is currently located there, and there's a great deal of work that we're doing in terms of international relations at the moment. Legal and legislative services is located there because so much of their work is to do with policy. There is a consideration about whether it should be located in corporate. And the major work that they've been doing this year will also assist us in the new amended legislation that will need to come to the NCOP, as well as the Green Paper. At the moment, issues of social inclusion and higher education training are also there. So the work that we do is supporting HRD Council, making sure that there's coordination and integration. Very critically, developing an integrated operational management information system and decision support system. I've been quite concerned at the poor information that we have for planning purposes in some components of the department, and we are working hard to correct that. In terms of university education, once you've removed the money that goes, the 17 billion or so that goes directly to universities and to related organizations such as the Council for Higher Education and the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, the branch is left with nearly 20 million for covering salaries and for covering its operational expenditures. The way we're currently allocated is that, organized, is that there's a chief director looking at academic planning and management, another looking at financial planning and information systems, another looking at policy and development, and then we have managed something that you may want to have more detail on in the future, but the responsibilities of teacher education have been constituted as belonging part in higher education and part in the province. And there's good reason for that. The issue of subsidies, of course, and planning for that is also located within the branch, but we've indicated the budget for that separately. There's a few key performance measures. One is we've got to improve our enrollment planning, and we've got to improve the throughput of students and the quality students through the higher education system. We have to produce much better quality graduates for many reasons, one of them being to create the patterns of succession of new academics and researchers coming into the system. We also give financial management support to the universities, to the National Institutes of Higher Education, and to public entities. We have to use the steering mechanisms that we have, primarily through funding formula and other policy documents, to encourage universities to improve teaching and learning. And we have a very well-functioning, although we would like to do more work this year to improve it, higher education management information system. It's very detailed information that's available through HEMIS. And Dr. Mohlobo might indicate, if he has time when he speaks, that we currently are doing extensive work to put into place a FECMIS so that we have a further education and training management information system. We also, in terms of the legislation and the statutes under which universities operate, work with them to give support where necessary, and we support them in terms of improving governance, and manage the registration of private higher education institutions. One of the new components to this particular branch which didn't previously exist, but we've taken the responsibility with a split from the DOE, is to make sure that we see it as an explicit responsibility of the branch to develop quality teachers. The next branch is the branch on vocational and continuing education and training. I'm going to hand over to Dr. Mahlobo to present that, but before I do, I thought it might be useful for me just to give an indication of a very important component of the Division of Revenue Act, which is new. Dr. Mahlobo, shall I quickly explain that to you? Dr. Mahlobo will take it in detail. But basically, with the allocation of the FET Act to the Minister of Higher Education and Training, it's quite clear that the intention of the President, as understood by the Minister of Finance, is that the responsibility for FET colleges should move to a national function so that the FET colleges are understood as part of the higher education and training system. That will require quite comprehensive legal work, including the possibility of an amendment to the Constitution. The Council of Education Ministers, all nine ministers, are very keen for this to happen. We've had three Council of Education Ministers, but the first one, that was a Council of Education Ministers primarily called by the Department of Higher Education and Training. The MECs and the head of department are all emphatic that this must happen as soon as possible. I think that the view of many MECs is that they're completely consumed with dealing with the challenges in schools, and they don't actually... they would prefer to see the National Department taking full responsibility. At the moment, we're governed by two important legislative instruments in this regard. The first is, of course, the FET Act, and the FET Act gives specific responsibilities to the Minister, to the DG, to the MECs, and to the provincial head of departments. But the other is that when the Minister of Finance tabled the medium-term budget policy statement, he indicated then that he was going to adjust the provincial equitable share to identify which money was allocated to what provinces for FET colleges, take that entire amount out of a provincial equitable share, give it to higher education as a conditional grant. And then once it's given to us a conditional grant, then we give it back to the provinces. Now, it's a rerouting of the same money, but the reason is a very important one, is because it enabled us to give conditions. Okay. And the conditions were very critical because it enabled us to move towards a much more streamlined national process. So I'm glad I've been able to explain that before Dr. Mahlobo comes in. I'm not sure if we have copies of the sections of the Division of Revenue Bill, but for those of you who have Division of Revenue in your office, the allocations per province for the FET grant are given on page 37 of the Division of Revenue Bill, and the grant framework, which indicates the legal requirements of the provinces to conform with what we think needs to be done, is given on page 114. But Dr. Mahlobo will go over that in some detail. Chairperson, I know that I've gone very quickly through the first three programs, but that's because we felt that the FET one, being such an important part of the work of NCOC, should be given additional time. So Dr. Mahlobo will do program four in a little more detail, and then I will do the program on skills development from slide 18. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just would like to explain that vocational education and continuing education is a function in this department, which is largely made up of colleges and adult education and training. As the DG has indicated, these functions are administered in terms of the Adult Basic Education and Training Act and the Further Education and Training Colleges Act. the nature of the legislative capacity on the side of the minister is that the authority of the minister here is concurrent with that of the MEC in each province for both functions. The 3.9 billion, which is put as an allocation on this program, does not include the administration and management of adult education and training, which is still in the provinces, and it is still program six on the provincial budget. This conditional grant only includes FET colleges only, and not adult education and training. That money is still lies in the program six of the provincial education department. The vocational education and training function, basically, once you transfer that 3.7 billion, then it does mean that this department has just over 3.2 billion to provide support to colleges and to provide support and provide leadership to adult education and training functions. There are two main functions or two sub-programs in this branch, and one function is institutional support. Basically, this function provides leadership in areas such as labor relations and conditions of service, and it deals with issues relating such an activity as the planning and monitoring of public colleges and the regulation of private colleges, and basically, that is the major task of this function, the planning and institutional support. And the programs function basically looks after the planning and monitoring and administration of the examination function. And it's responsible for the curriculum development and support of colleges. It is responsible for the student support services and all youth development programs in these institutions. There are a few key performance indicators, performance measures for this function, and one of the performance indicators, performance measures, is to try and sort out and support the institutional capacity and development of FET colleges. As members may be aware, the capacity of these institutions to deliver optimally is not at the level that one can say they are delivering adequately, particularly in relation to the skills development needs of the country. And therefore, a greater part of the work of this department, of this function, is to support colleges to develop institutional governance and institutional management, the management information system, so that we have data at our fingertips in the long run. And as you also may be aware, the scourge of private FET colleges, this is the department which is responsible to deal with the issues relating to what measures can be put in place in order to eliminate the so-called fly-by-nights so that they do not continue to hoodwink our people and get away with their hard-earned money. Also, there is a recognition that this function must ensure that the programs that are offered in these institutions respond to the needs. And in other words, not to fit everybody into one or two programs, but it must be what is the nature of the need that is out there, and then this program then must respond to the nature of the need, and therefore diversify program offerings. And in the new education and training landscape, this is likely going to be easy to happen because both the training function and the education function is now within one department, and therefore through this function we will be able to establish a pipeline approach which integrates the provision of theory by colleges and the provision of web-based learning by institution with the support of the CETA funding and with the support of the NSF grant. And I think the DG will point that out later on. We're also, during this course of this year, we would like working with provinces to reconceptualize, given the changed landscape with regard to education and training, to reconceptualize the notion of adult education and training. Again, in that area, there must be a distinction between those adults who would want to read, to be able to read and write. And then basically, because conceptually that function is part of the basic education function, but those, there may be adults who want to write to do their matrics, and there may be adults who would want to make a living out of getting a particular skill. And this is the conceptualization that we would like to bring about with regard to redesign and the rethinking of what adult education is about. This we will have to do in consultation with our provincial counterparts as well. As I indicated earlier, on slide 16, you have the budget breakdown for the MTEF period. It's 3.7, 3.9, and 4.1. And part of those allocations include the conditions, the improvement of the conditions of service, as my colleague has indicated, and that is still part of the, that is still being negotiated in the collective bargaining chamber. And therefore, the part which is meant for conditions, improvement of the conditions of service, is not going to be transferred to provinces before a collective agreement is reached. But already some of the transfers has already been executed from this grant during the month, for the month of April and May. Madam Chair, I think I can pause there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. The last program that we need to present on is the program on skills development. This is an exciting area of work. What we have in terms of the National Skills Development Act is a set of arrangements that bring key stakeholders together to achieve the goal of deepening the reach and the quality of skills training for the employed and the unemployed. The National Skills Development Act establishes several key institutions to take this forward. One of them are sectoral education and training authorities, which people have come to know as CETAs, and they have I'm looking forward to working with the committee and explaining how we're taking the work of CETAs forward. The two key things that are happening indeed in the next few months is the Minister has extended the CETA landscape until the next financial year, and we have already tabled to the National Skills Authority our proposals for a new CETA landscape. So we have the CETAs, and their function has changed recently. They're primarily responsible for planning skills development strategies for a sector. Historically, they've had a great deal more to do in terms of quality assurance mechanisms. They still are managing that, but it's in the process of moving to the QCTO, the Qualification Council for Trade and Occupation. So there is a branch in the department that looks at CETA coordination, CETA monitoring. One of the key challenges in taking over that function is to locate the financial monitoring appropriately in the department, and we believe we want to do that in the finance section. The quality development and promotion work is mostly happening through the QCTO, and the QCTO
is working at the moment very closely with the South African Qualifications Authority whilst we are establishing the administrative mechanisms and just setting up a new institution. Setting up a new institution is unfortunately a time-consuming process. So to simultaneously manage the important work they have to do as well as getting systems in place is a challenge, and we will be looking for an EO, Executive Officer for the QCTO. At the moment, the acting DDG for the skills development is also the acting DDG for quality development and promotion. It also has responsibility for supporting the National Skills Authority, and the National Skills Authority is a body comprised of the key constituencies, community, labour and business, which has the responsibility for advising the Minister in terms of skills development. We've recently appointed a chairperson, Eddie Mojati-Bodu, who is has been in place for 2 months, but we intend to advertise the post of an executive officer for the NSA, and in the meantime, DDG Feroz Patel is acting as the EO for the NSS. One of the very important functions of the QCTO is to take forward some of the new legislative responsibilities that we have in terms of artisan development, which includes establishing a national artisan moderating body, which will have responsibility for giving leadership around trade testing, and also the development of an artisan register, which is desperately needed. So the key performance areas for the NSA is to promote the alignment of skills training and skills opportunities with the needs of the workplace and the need to grow our country's economy in line with all of the key development trajectories that we aspire to, including the industrial, the action plan for industrial policy, the rural development strategy, the science and technology strategy. We need to develop the people to do that. So the other body that's created through the National Skills Development Act is the National Skills Fund, and that has the responsibility to supplement the provision of funding in order to meet the goals of what we are currently working towards, which is the National Skills Development Strategy 2 and the NSDS 3, which the Minister is going to release for comment and for engagement with CETAs towards the end of this month. Chairperson, it's a new department. It's an exciting department. I think that we've got a critically important contribution to make to national goals. The difficulties of subdividing budgets from two departments means that one pie is cut into smaller parts, and this has huge implications for us. We do not have all of the staff that we need in the corporate function. We will be in discussion with Treasury around appropriate budget adjustments to assist us. For example, our most senior person in the personnel function is the Deputy Director. So at the moment, the CFO, who theoretically we were hoping would just be managing the finance function, is also managing corporate services and still giving considerable support to the Department of Basic Education. In fact, many of you would know Mr. Trudeau from Basic Education. The other thing that's quite difficult in terms of financial challenges is the extremely limited amount of money we have for projects. We're currently in a process where we're looking at what the different branches need in order to fulfill the commitments that we're making in the strategic plan and in the Minister's budget votes, and seeing how we can use that $8 million and distribute it across projects. So Minister has made some absolutely correct commitments, and we're determined to make sure that they are fulfilled. But all of those are going to have to be stretched across the small amount of money that is available for projects. What that means is that we're quite a lean department. But I think that our intention is to work very closely with stakeholders and to bring in the energy and the enthusiasm and the intellectual resources of the sector to support us in our work. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Dickie. And all members from the department. I thank you for the presentation. Didi, maybe I should, you know, plead with you that the issue of staffing, it shouldn't happen like one department that for the past 3 financial years they'll be just indicating that because of the integration we are unable to fill this post. I don't think it will be a situation with the Department of Higher Education. One would expect that the next financial year at least we get something positive, because without the necessary staff it's going to be difficult really to take our work forward. I'm just going to open up for the members to interact with the presentation. I will start with Mrs. Kasmene, Honorable Faiba, Honorable Gabriela, Raki. You know, I don't know whether members are raising hands or that, you know. Can you be free to do that? Honorable Masha Maite and then Honorable Nui in that sequence.
Let me take this opportunity to thank the department for the presentation, which is very intense. My first question is about the youth that are not at school, the youth that are out of work, who are not employed. What are the plans of the department, and are those plans funded for? The second question is on HIV and AIDS. Do you have any programs, and are those programs funded for students and also lecturers? The RPL, recognition of prior learning, I've been trying to look through the strategic plan to check whether the department has any issues in terms of encouraging this recognition of prior learning in at all levels, workplace or whatever level, for people who want to further their studies. And any new universities in plan by the department? Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for the department for that detailed budget speech of this. I would just like to say, I've had a training company for a few years before I got involved into politics, as they say, been there, done that, got the T-shirt. I've been there from CETA started off, and it's been the most corrupt thing that I've ever seen when it was run by the Department of Labor. I hope that from now on things get to be much better. CETA funding was misused with massive corruption in 2008, as from 2007, as you know yourself, under the Department of Labor. I would like to know what measures you have in place to regulate and monitor these CETAs until they look at them again, to use the fund correctly. As they show that previously wastage of public funds was one of the biggest things. Will this new finance department that will look at this, will they run this funds of the CETAs properly? Because I will look at that, and in a year's time I would like to actually see if there's a difference in it, because I mean millions and millions of public funds were actually misused and it didn't get to the people that actually needed the training. The second one, skills training, as this was my forte at that stage. In the building industry, bricklayers, plumbers, carpenters, they used to get on-job training for long periods, and then they used to go to Olifantsfontein to do their trade test. As soon as an artisan got out of Olifantsfontein, any builder would actually appoint such an artisan because he would know that the quality of such an artisan is of a high standard. What happens now is people go to an FET college. I mean, I was in direct opposition with FET colleges with my qualified instructors as well. But the problem is you get a course of a few weeks or a few months, and it's not enough for such an artisan to be competent. So when this person gets a certificate, it doesn't mean that this person is competent to achieve certain objectives, which was in the, I would almost say in the old days, which was done at Olifantsfontein. So we don't sit with a quality of artisan that we used to have. And that seems to be specifically in the building industry where you talk to people. As I say, when they've done that, I speak to the people on the ground. They've got a big problem with the quality of the artisans. And I really think that the standard should be looked at in the colleges and the longer term of on-job training before people get qualifications. I know RPL is a system, but I can RPL you to lay 1,000 bricks now when I want you to go and build a casino. That same person, when he gets on the on-job situation, he's not competent in doing the same job than some of the people that's been working there for a long time. So that's just a few things that I would like to mention. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must recognize that it is very difficult to establish a new department, and department also was established, you can say, in the past 3 months. That is very difficult. Now my question is, why is the division between the two departments, basic education and higher education, so late? Because I believe that there will be a lot of problems for this lean department to get the standpoint in the department, in the government's operation. And then under administration, I recognize there is a 4% over the 2010 MTF period from 103.378 million in 2009 and 10 to 115 in 2012 and 13. Now, I'm actually a bit worried because the 4% is much less than the inflation rate. How will this department making plans to deal with this low amount of money? Because the administration is a very important part of the department to establish it. The third one is my colleague Faber already elaborated on the CITES by the department. Now, what is there a monitoring system now in place to monitor the CITES so that they can actually get to the aim of why the CITES actually, what their work actually is to better the situation in the communities for skills development? And the other one is also about the monitoring and evaluation system. I'm a bit worried because due to the newly established department, is the monitoring and evaluation systems now in place to do the actual work to see that we have the best outcome in the department and for South Africa? And the last one, Madam Chairperson, you touch on it, the filling and the advertisements of posts. How far is this process? Thank you.
Chairperson, only two questions. I know that, actually acknowledge that, you know, the President has placed education as the first priority in this country. But what I want to check with the department is on, it's about the adult education and training. That if adult education and training is prioritized here, why are the teachers, call them the teachers in basic education and training, called practitioners, who are actual paid per hours, and to the extent some of them are not even actual qualified teachers? If we prioritize this adult education, why do we have to employ people who do not have skills to impart to the adult at that level. And like I said, unlike teachers in the mainstream, they get paid per hours, little salaries. They are not actually recognized like teachers in the mainstream. And the second question is to the department is on the subject. I know colleagues have asked this question. Just want to put it in this way that, you know, the subsidiaries such as CITES, how does the department make sure that they account for the money that are given to them? And lastly, what is the department intervention on the poor student who always drop out of the university because they do not get money from this NSF, the money that is from the student? What is the department doing to assist them? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, and thanks for the DG to make this presentation. DG, in the presentation you talked about transfer of functions from the Department of Labor. Can you share with the committee those functions, and then what is your time frame for ensuring that these functions are completely transferred from the Department of Labor? And my second question, Honorable Chair, is in relation to the number of institutions, universities, public entities, FETs, CITES. I don't know whether they've been provided in the front end, but I think it's important that we know the figures of all these institutions, because I assume that the budget, the 32 billion, if I'm not mistaken, the 32 billion is informed. Yeah, the 32 billion is informed by the number of all these institutions. So can you share with us the number? Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Chairperson, maybe I'll start with the addition on the agencies or statutory bodies. I'm rustling now that I'm here. I just want to... I'm not sure whether SACE falls under higher education or basic education in terms of the separation. And then maybe my question would be in another interaction with the relevant department, which I don't know currently which one is it. But also I want to go to the program 4, which in your slides you talk about the grants, we call it conditional grants, and you are saying there is an amount that is left with provinces in ensuring that there is a successful transition or transfer. I see a lot of money. I'm not sure whether I'm reading it correctly when you say, in terms of the what's the purpose of it. Is it to support from the conditional service? And then it also says support functions, which are not clarified in terms of what is it. Because I'm coming from Gauteng, there are lots of FET colleges there, and there has been instability, doing now and then. When they see me, they say, hey, you started this thing when you were provincial leader of such, and were still there. So they want to grab me anyway. So I just want to get clarity in terms of what is this crunch for, and what are these things that you say are the support functions at provincial level. The other thing is the failure rate. You have
whatever million starting grade are, others drop out before grade 12, and 500,000 maybe writing at grade 12, and half of 500,000 don't make it. And FET, ABET, and higher education falls under you. I'm not sure in terms of the mechanism, even if it's not in this MTAF, in terms of responding, whether you respond to the CETAs or respond to the FET or respond to the ABET, because they just disappear. We only are able to track those that are writing supplementary, but most of them don't write, and they disappear. The other one is on the sub-program and qualifications of teachers, of lecturers at the FET. There has been a cry from the FET lecturers with the introduction of the NCV. And also in your slides, you allude to that there are gaps, irrelevant curriculum, with regards to the NCV and the curriculum that is not responding to the industry. And you talk of the revision, the need to revise. There's April and September. But also, when you talk of, I'm not sure, there's training, whatever training, the educate, the lecturers, when this was introduced, have been crying about the problem of the microwave. I'm sure the DG knows exactly what I mean about the microwave. And here in Australia, we talk about posting these programs into your website, which becomes worse, just posting, and one have to look into the internet. That does not translate itself to capacity, because they've been crying about capacity. And also they were admitting that there is a lot of high failure rate to learners because they themselves as lecturers don't have capacity. The other thing is on the, which goes together with the continuous assessment. You can't just microwave them and then expect that they will do the right thing. The other thing is on the recruitment of educators or teachers to be. The country has been having problems of students not wanting to become teachers, mostly with Africans. They will look at the lifestyle of teachers and say, it won't take us anywhere. And then the findings that you find at foundation phase, having a lot of student teachers there being white females, which might be a problem in future in terms of the how where you deploy them, because as the old generation of teachers age, you then have a problem of who to place at the foundation phase. So I'm not sure whether you now are having some innovations of how to recruit them and market this profession so that they're able to take up the teaching. I think the other one is on the qualifications of the lecturers. You also are talking about there will be a process of determining some minimum standards. I'm taking it from, firstly, the NCV, which you say it does not necessarily satisfy the interest of the industry. And here there's only an academic CHE or higher education responding to the qualification on the minimum qualification. So if you leave out the industry participation in that, you'll have also educators that are not going to satisfy or be able to respond to what industry needs because they're lacking the industry knowledge. And also the nature of this sector is that you may not have an M plus 3 or an M plus 4
because of where we're coming from. You just have the trait, this particular trait, and then they're able to go there, facilitate and go out, or be there employed but not having this. So whether you resolve that at bargaining or whatever, but there is a problem in terms of if we only just look at pure academic one and look at the M+3 without looking really at what is this sector about. The other one is on the human resource capacity.
Let's do this. You'll get another opportunity so that we allow the department to, I think,
to respond.
They've got more than enough questions. We'll allow for another round.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Committee, for excellent questions that will help us to engage. Chairperson, I've written down all the questions, but there are a couple that are thematic, where several people have raised them, and I'm going to deal with those first. You yourself, as well as Member de Villiers and Member Mashidi, have raised questions about this process of establishing the department timeframes, filling all posts. I think that we must understand each other very carefully here, because unfortunately when the President chooses to create a new department, and I think he's absolutely correct to have created this department, and we can talk about why it's such an important bringing together of different functions, the national budget doesn't grow. So basically, the budget that's allocated to the Department of Education and the budget that's allocated to the Department of Labor has to be split. With the split from the Department of Education, the way it was managed is that there's no vacancies. So the people you get are the people you get, and there's no additional money in vacancies or anything to grow. So the process that we are undertaking, and both Mr. Trudeau and myself were agreeing very strongly when the question was being asked, the critical posts must be filled. And I think that there is an understanding in National Treasury that they will be expecting some motivation from us to say we will need these additional posts and we'll have to motivate for them. But we clearly can't do the work that's required as well as we would like to unless we get additional funding for critical posts. And I think Mr. Trudeau is agreeing with us. In terms of the function, we've worked according to the timeline that the presidency set. Because of the timing of the new administration and the timing of the budget processes, the budget for 2009 and 2010 was given to the Department of Education, and it was always the intention that it would stay with the Department of Education and the Department of Labor till the 31st of March. Department of Labor continues into 2010-2011, but the Department of Education is finished. It's going to be complications this year because who's going to report on the department report? Who's the executive authority? Those things are still going to be resolved. But we are on time. All of the staff that we've been allocated are with us. The budget is with us. We're operating. And the legislation, there was a strange period in between, and it's the nature of creation of a new department, where, for example, if we take the Department of Labor staff, the Department of Labor were still reporting to DG Manu technically and on his payroll, but in fact they were working with us. If there had ever been a dispute, I would have only been able to instruct him through DG Manu, but that never arose. People have responded very positively. The same with the Department of Education. I've been working very closely with Acting DDG Dr. Mokhlobo since I arrived in the department. But in all of that time, he was paid by the DOE, and his performance appraisal and his salary, etc., came from the Department of Education, but it was never an obstacle. The other question that was related to this, which I think came from Member Mashidi, is the question of what are the functions from... Please correct me.
Masha Maite.
Thank you. I'm just going to write it down, Masha Maite. And I hope people will correct me all the way through to is what are the functions from Skills? Actually, I can make available to the committee the Skills Development Act. And if members read the Skills Development Act, you'll see it covers all of the functions. And it's fundamentally the National Skills Fund, the CETAs, the National Skills Authority, the Artisan Training Body. So there was a branch within the National, the Department of Labor that was skilled, and more or less that's moved across to us. There were some employment service functions which have stayed with the Department of Labor, but we will still need to work very closely with the Department of Labor, particularly during the transition. For example, the National Department of Labor has regional offices, and we don't have regional offices yet. We will be putting in an NTS bid because I think that for various reasons, I think we may not have one per province, and that may also be something that concerns NCOP, but it will depend on how much money is available. So there's some components of our work where we're still quite dependent on the Department of Labor. For example, applications for trade testing come through the regional offices, which we don't have. So we have protocols and agreements with the Department of Labor that they will continue to receive those applications, and so there are some mopping up procedures. So those are the issues around the creation of the Department of the Post. The second one, which I've identified as a cost-cutting question that I want to talk about, is the one that has been of concern to several members of the committee, member Rusmani, member Ngube in particular, and that's the national challenge we face around young people. One of the things that we are putting into place is proper information systems so that we can speak very definitively about the challenges that we face. But I'm going to refer to work that's been done by Dr. Nico Kruti and Dr. Charles Shepherd from CHET, which is an NGO based in Cape Town, the Consortium for Higher Education and Training. And they've done some very interesting work which looks at the data that's available through the household survey. Now, I've been frustrated for many years. Whenever you look at employment data, I don't find the age categorizations helpful. It goes from 16 to 25 or 28 or something like that. And, you know, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds are in school, so what's the point of saying they're unemployed? It's not helpful. But what Dr. Kruta and Dr. Shepherd have done is they've taken from the household survey young people aged between the ages of 18 and 24 and analyzed. So if you just look at that age group, many of them are still in school. It's probably as many as 25 to 30% are still in school, and that in itself is interesting. But what their figures tell us, Chairperson, is that 46% of young people between the ages of 18 to 24, which is 2.4 million, are not in education, are not in training, and not in employment. And that's precisely what is concerning this committee. And I think that's exactly why the work of this department in bringing together education and training and a range of possibilities is so important. We are still, I think, developing conceptually, and that's why the green paper is so important, the range of pathways that must exist for young people. But if I can talk a little bit about the existing pathways. Firstly, if you look, and we've covered this in the Minister's budget speech tomorrow, so you'll get more details there. But if you look at the number of young people that are doing something that I think is very brave and very admirable and courageous, is many young people, about 40% or so of the people who write the grade 10 exam, the grade 10 ABET exam, are younger than 30. So lots of young people who would have expected to have passed through the schooling system are carrying on with completion of the grade 10 exam, the general education and training qualification. And many of them will be proceeding with our adult matric. So the adult matric is going to be aimed at adults, but also at young people, and we can talk about that in more detail. The other thing is that government has, over the last few years, done an enormous amount of work around FET colleges and has especially constructed the new curriculum that Member Ngube was talking about, and I'll answer her questions in more detail. In fact, I'm sure Dr. Mokhrobo would like to answer those. As an opportunity for young people to reach a matric equivalent with a vocational pathway. And the intention of the President is that he would like us to rapidly expand those colleges, expand access. And if you listen carefully to what Member Ngube was asking, you'll understand that there are some significant problems. And the position that we're beginning to develop is to say we would rather consolidate quality before expansion. And there's good understanding in the committee around that. if you look at the Clete and Shepherd figures, what they tell us is that of the young people aged between 18 to 24, it's about 10% that are in colleges and universities. So there are challenges to improve access to education, improve universities, improve access to FET colleges. But there's also the work that's done through the CETAs, where we have many opportunities for young people to pick up learnerships, to do short courses. And I'm looking forward to being invited back to the committee, and I would particularly like in that meeting, because I know you have to finish by 11, to look at our National Skills Development Strategy 3 and how we're prioritizing young people in the NSDSC, and we'll be working closely with provinces on that. So now I'm going to go through the questions, leaving some for Mr. Trudeau and Dr. Mokhlobo, but answering some of them quickly. So in terms of Member Asmeni's question, the issue of youth out of school, there's much more to talk about, but there's some preliminary responses. In terms of HIV and AIDS, we've just, the department with the Higher Education South Africa, which is the Association of Vice Chancellors of Universities, has done some really excellent work around HIV AIDS with lecturers, students, and workers at universities. And if members are interested, I can forward some of the recent findings, and there's been press coverage of that. The key thing, the important thing about that project is it's really attempted to build capacity. It hasn't just been a project that comes in with a lot of fanfare. It's dealt with the university's teaching, the institutional practice to improve the work that happens with HIV and AIDS. And the good news about the results is that, in fact, the incidence rates among students are lower than in the general population, which is good. But, in fact, where I think a lot of work needs to be done is in the workers in universities, where it's closer to the national patterns. And one would hope that in a very educational environment like universities, that kind of transfer of understanding and skills would also be a priority for the university. I want to thank the member for raising the issue around recognition of prior learning. I'm going to come back to that in terms of Member Farber's question. But just to say that we have begun to work very closely with the three qualification councils in SAQA. I've had two meetings with them, and we've agreed to have what we're calling an NQF forum, where we'll be meeting the three qualification councils and SAQA three or four times a year. And one of the projects that we've identified is to start working on the RPL processes. It's going to be particularly important that we take it through the QCTO work, but we are determined that we're going to move on that. The one addition that I want to make is when we asked for the department strat plan to be distributed, we also asked that the strat plans for all of the CETAs and for all of the public entities also be distributed. If those haven't been received, then we can work with the parliamentary officer to make sure that you get them. But then you'll also get the SAQA strat plan, which explicitly covers some of the RPL work. But falling behind, and we've got a long way to go. Chairperson, in terms of the new universities, there are several fundamental points. Number one, we do need to expand access. And so there's two options. You either expand in your existing capacity or you build new capacity. There's a very strong commitment, I think, politically, that we do need new universities in the two provinces which have been campaigning for this for a long time. At the moment, in both of those provinces, there are a National Institute of Higher Education which coordinate the provision of education, of higher education in those two provinces by partnerships with other universities. And I think that the amount that's allocated to the two national institutes for this year is in the region of 48 million. What the minister announced in his budget speech in the House of Assembly is that we are appointing two task teams to take forward the work very urgently. Professor Tango Mtembu is going to be leading the work in Mpumalanga. He's the Vice Chancellor of the Central University of Technology in Bloemfontein. And Professor Cheryl Verrey, who is the Vice Chancellor of the University of Pretoria, is going to be leading the work in terms of the Northern Cape. Now, they're going to be working together very closely because there will be some commonalities. And what's exciting for me about this possibility is that this, if we are able to move with establishing two universities, I think we've got an opportunity to do things entirely differently. We're talking about two universities that will be established as the first post-apartheid South African universities. And I have a strong view, which clearly I've been in engagement with the task teams and the stakeholders on this, that we need to start thinking about what is the best post-school education institution that will best suit the economic needs of those provinces. And to the extent that that's taken forward formally in the capacity of a university, because we want to look for innovative ways of doing it, it also has to be founded on excellence. I might be out of order, Chair, but I really don't want to move hastily into establishing universities, because if you look at the way universities have been established in this country over the last 20 or 30 years, the particular universities established in such haste without any real depth of scholarship, and it's those students that in the end are disadvantaged in terms of the credibility of their qualifications. So they have to be excellent. In terms of Member Farber's question, I'm going to ask Mr. Trudeau and to talk about what we're doing from Mr. Trudeau's office to deal with issues of all of the allegations of CETA corruption and the monitoring. I'm going to give him that chance now before carrying on with the artisan trading centres. But if I can say that the view that I've come to after the 7 or 8 months that I've been with the department is, in fact, there's many CETAs that do excellent work. I think we do have to monitor them very carefully in terms of the more judicious use of public money. But I also think that one of the difficulties has been that CETAs haven't been dealt with firmly enough when they've transgressed. And we're very close at the moment in working with the Minister and with the National Skills Authority, who are completely supportive, that they're going to be about 4 CETAs that we're going to be taking action against very soon. And I think our responsibility of government is to do the monitoring, to act firmly, because otherwise the entire sector suffers from the lack of credibility because of the few that aren't doing their work. So, Chairperson, I'm just going to pause and ask Mr. Trudeau to talk about the actions that we're going to be taking in relation to monitoring the CETA performance.
Thank you, Dean. Chairperson, members, what we have at the moment set in place in the department is that we have a separate unit which we refer to as the Development Support and Public Entities Unit. Now, the monitoring specifically for public entities, I not only want to focus on CETAs, but also on the 3 public entities. It's actually a two-legged approach. On the one side, we have financial monitoring, but on the other side, there's also what we can refer to as our strategic monitoring. That will be in a component in Program 5, our Skills Development Branch, where they will look at the actual functions of the CETAs and do they perform the actual functions. In terms of financial monitoring, there's quite a number of things that we are doing. The first one would be that we would look at compliance monitoring. Now, compliance monitoring would refer to all the issues around financial compliance, specifically those linked to the PFMA and Treasury regulations, as well as certain financial compliance matters in their own legislation. We may have some of those, and we are busy compiling a whole list so that we can, on the one part, communicate that to them so that they know what they are supposed to comply with, but on the other side, so that we know what we need to monitor. Secondly, we do have a system in place to do evaluations of and analysis of financial statements. Now, we will start specifically with the CETAs, with the financial statements of the past, so that we can also get a clearer understanding of what the position was there. And then that will obviously be an ongoing thing in the future. We also have budget and expenditure monitoring. Now, for that purpose, we have quarterly reports that we will receive. Communication already went out to everybody in that respect. So we will receive quarterly reports. In those reports, that will be part of the two-legged approach. We will get some performance information as well as financial information. monitor those, look at those, evaluate those. We will quarterly report to the minister and the DG on each and every CETA, each and every public entity. But we also plan to have monitoring visits to all the public entities, not only the CETAs, but also the other three, so that some of the areas that we do find in the monitoring process, that we follow that up with them, and that we can try and clarify some of the issues to prevent what apparently happened in the past. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. If I can move now to the issue of artisan training, and I'm going to pick up some of the questions raised by Member Ngube under this section. The question of artisan training has been identified as a serious problem. I think that what happened post-94 is that there were innovative new models put into place, and there has been a decline that reached its depths in about 2005 and 6 in terms of the production of artisans, and now a huge new interest and a huge amount of work that's happening. The minister will indicate in his budget speech that he's going to take a special interest in this. Fundamentally, why it touches on the questions raised by Member Ngube is it because it also has to do with the question of the role of the colleges in this matter. The current legislation provides for that we're in between the legislation and the National Skills Development Act that provides for a new artisan training system and the old National Manpower Act for the old system. And the transition between those two we need to accelerate very rapidly. The current legislation provides for 4 routes to become an artisan. The one is the traditional apprenticeship system, which is when a person is fundamentally taken in by a company and then asked as part of their training to acquire courses that have historically been called the NATED 191 courses, the N courses. Secondly, the route to becoming an artisan can also be through the NCV. And the NCV is a qualification that's offered at the FET colleges that was introduced 3 years ago. You can also become an artisan through a learnership. And the learnership, the theoretical components of that is not the N or the NCV, but the units that are accredited by the different CETAs. And you can also become an artisan by RPL. What makes all of those 4 different routes one thing in the end, being the artisan, is the trade test. So whether you do the N, whether you do the NCV, whether you RPL'd, or whether you do a learnership, you have to write the trade test. Now, clearly, as I go through these 4 different routes, there's clearly a need to take the system and tighten it and improve it, which is exactly what we hope to be doing through the artisan moderating body. There's some very interesting and innovative work that's been done within business in some of the CETAs, and it has to be a priority for us. So Olifants Fontaine is still there. There's other trade testing centres across the country, and clearly as we build together the one component of the purpose of colleges being contributing to artisan training, we also want to consolidate the use of colleges more often as testing centres, and we also just have to really improve the system. We believe it needs a great deal of attention, and I am of the view that Ngilela needs a great deal of attention. And I think we need to do some fast-track specialised work there. In terms of Member de Villiers questions, I think that the structural of DOE, I think I've answered that. We are on track. It was made basically determined by the timing of the elections and the new administration and the fact that the budget allocations were quite clearly to the Department of Labour, Department of Education, and our budget. This is our first budget. I'm going to ask Tiens again to pick up the issues of the 4% increase, which is maybe a very hopeful view of inflation in the next few years.
Chair, I'll be very short on that one. Perhaps just to reflect that, to make it a bit more shocking, if one look at the actual numbers in the E&E, there's a drop from 2019 to 2011. Now, that is actually because we had to reprioritize when we finalized our budget for the new MTF based on the limited funds that we received. Mm-hmm. A part of the money previously provided for in the baseline under administration had to be shifted to Program 4 to assist with the funding of the examination service, where there's substantially limited funds available. Now, if you take that into account, the good news is actually that we grow administration over the MTF from this financial year with around 6 to 6.5% to make up for that backlog that we have from 2019 to 2011. DG mentioned that we will go to Treasury. We have two exercises in place at the moment. The one is to do a zero-based budgeting for the current financial year, and if there's a need to even go to Treasury for the adjustments estimate to have some adjustments on the budget. But secondly, we will definitely also, for the total operations of the department, go with the MTF into the 2011 MTF, those normally submitted around July. So we hope to do that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Trudeau. If I can now go to the other question from Mr. de Villiers on monitoring and evaluation. This is what we believe to be centrally important in our department, and that's why it has a branch of its own. And we're constructing a matrix system so that there's monitoring and evaluation for the subsystem in the branch as well as thematically across, because we don't want to have different silos. For universities, the monitoring and evaluation, I think, systems are very well established. In terms of the colleges, I'm going to talk to that just now when I begin the response to Member Ngobe's question. And with the CETAs, we've got a reasonable system and we're going to be improving it. If I can, I think Member de Villiers also the question about filling an advertised post. I had a discussion with the DT Treasury yesterday, and I think we took a bet because I was saying we're going to be submitting and we need. And he said, yeah, but you won't fill them. And I said, money's on the table. You give us the post, we'll fill them. Because we determined, we know that the administration is the core of the department. You know, the policy all depends on how effective the finance and admin is. If I can move to Member Mashamayeti's questions on adult education and training, I'm going to ask Dr. Mokhlobo to give more of a response there. The adult education and training system has gone through quite considerable development work over the last couple of years, including a white paper. The employment conditions in terms of practitioners is something that is an ongoing bone of contention. But Dr. Mokhlobo will answer that, and I will assist if necessary. If I can then take the question of the students who drop out, the poor students. Chairperson, I would really be delighted if a committee had time, and I know that this is a committee with a broad range of responsibilities, to look at the National Student Financial Aid Scheme Ministerial Report. Anybody who's doing any constituency work is dealing with these issues. So I think that we need to just understand that the Minister commissioned Ministerial Committee on the NSFAS. It's done excellent work. We can arrange for copies to be sent to Parliament, but it is available on the website. The Minister released the Ministerial report in March, and now it's time for public to comment. What that means is that I'm hoping, again, given the constraints of the busyness of the parliamentary schedule, particularly the World Cup this year, that the Portfolio Committee and the Assembly may be having public hearings, and it may be something that you might want to do jointly. But the issue of young people who go to university and do not receive all of the support that they need. There's a view in the report that this is contributing to the failure rate. Fundamentally, there's an amount in the region of 2 billion rand available every year to fund the poorest of the students. And there's means tests in place that identify the poorest students and they receive the money. But in some institutions, the number of students that are poor are greater than the amount of money
that's available. So they tend to distribute the money across as many poor students as they can. And it's a very difficult choice because then it means that many students don't get quite enough money to live, to eat, to buy books. And the alternative is that fewer poor students get enough. Are we taking questions now, T?
Gunda, can you allow the member to finish responding to the first question?
Change.
Please, I'm going to
contest
you.
Change, just on something that you've just said now.
I will allow for a follow-up. Can you just note that?
Thank you, Chief. So the NSFAS report is there, and the minister will, we're hoping by July, August, be giving a response in terms of what he wants NSFAS to do. Chairperson, the only thing I'm going to say in response to Member Nube's questions, and she's very experienced in this field, I'll hand many of them over to Dr. Mhlobo, but there's three that I'm going to try and explain before handing over to him. The first is the question of the South African Council of Educators. The Act of SAS has been allocated to the Minister of Basic Education, but it's the Act still governs the question of educators in FET colleges. So we still have a relationship with SAS. And SAS is determined that it's understood that the question of being an educator in FET college is a professional responsibility and that they're a member of SAS. SAS is a participant in an initiative that we've taken as the department that I think is critically important and I'm very pleased about. The complexity of this sector and the complexity of the policy changes that have been introduced and the way in which particular difficulties in implementing one component has impacted on how another component is able to function has, in my view, left the sector very fragile. It's also in between national and provincial, and I've already indicated this, but the MECs are very keen for to move as quickly as possible. And with that comes a sense of people saying, I don't know how Hansard will explain that, but so we've decided that the only way in which we're going to really be able to pull the sector together rapidly and urgently is to pull all of the stakeholders together around one table and to agree on some of the urgent things that need to happen to move us forward. We can't be talking to the employers who are currently the councils of the colleges and then separately talking to the principals and then separately talking to the unions. So I think that we learned a little bit from the model of the Teacher Education Summit, and it's not at all the same, but we've certainly learned from that. So last Friday, the 9th, is that last Friday, 2 weeks ago, on the 9th of April, we had what we called a round table, which was attended by about 150 people. It included all of the provinces, it included all of the unions, it included SAS, it included the qualification councils, it included the principals organization, the employers organization, and what we presented was an analysis of what we understand the challenges to be, and we were really frank. We didn't hold anything back. Things that Member Ngube has put on the table, like the low pass rate, questions about what programs need to be taught, lecturer qualifications and experience, we put it all there. And what the roundtable has done is agreed to a steering committee, and the steering committee has already agreed to a whole range of work streams. So that by August we must know what in-courses we're going to teach next year, where are we going to get lectures from, who's going to be the employer, what are the processes. So, and we've also got funding. We got funding from the Swiss South Africa Cooperation Agreement that's going to fund that work, so we're going to work very intensively. At the same time, and this is where I want to come back to Member de Villiers' question, the roundtable also agreed to the fact that we need to establish a rigorous policy monitoring evaluation base for the sector. And we're hoping that's going to be funded by one of the other governments, which we'll brief you on once that's finalized, so that we have at least an 18 to 2 months process of knowing what's going on in the sector. I think that members in the And us in the Zimba Portfolio Committee have been quite frustrated because it's difficult to actually even say how many students are there because it's difficult to even count. How do you count NCV versus N versus short course?
Mm.
Are we going to be using a FTE, full-time equivalent model like the universities? So we've got to develop all of those rubrics.
Let me just apologize because I'm going to be forced to cut.
Yeah.
I think we are still having a lot that will need to interact, but and yourself aware that the arrangement in the NCOP is not like in the NA where you have higher education, the committee dealing with higher education. So here is a totally different, which is very frustrating. And I think in future what we are going to do now, the thing that forced us to take the two departments together is because of the time frames that tomorrow this higher education and basic education should be the budget would be passed. I think in future what we'll do, when you call the department, when we say higher education, it will be only higher education for that
day.
And then, so that it gives us more time to interact, more especially that this is a new department and we need more information around that. But I'm just to remember, I think what we'll do after this, we'll have to consider again calling the Department of Higher Education because we had an opportunity of interacting at least with basic education in several occasions than higher education. We still need more, you know, from higher education to interact so that we are on the same level with our understanding. I think members will really understand that. And if there are other questions, members will just write them down. Members, you are free to note them down and just pass to the department.
Return question.
This is one meeting. If I can just perhaps, or informally just ask the people or the department in front of us, I would just like to know on the NQF rankings, which used to be like 150, which is basic education, 4-5, which was higher education, tertiary education. How does those structures work now with the new adjustment? Just for interest sake, I would like to know.
Written reply.
Honourable Fiber, I think even when we do the budget vote, it's an opportunity for you on your statement that you raise the questions and the ministers, relevant ministers, will have an opportunity to respond to your questions in that answer.
Okay,
thank you, Honourable.
Very soon.
On her last twenty pala.
I'm going to request members and all people who are in this meeting to introduce themselves so that we can know and proceed with our presentation. I'll start by myself. I'm Wendy McCarthy, the chairperson of the Select Committee on Education and Recreation.
Bobby Subrayan, Acting Director General, Department of Basic Education.
Mpepa Mulelekwa, Acting CFO, Department of Basic Education.
I'm Vivian Cardle, the DDG, Basic Education.
Wilson Makalanchese, Executive Director.
Thinking of a member of this committee representing Gauteng at the NCOP.
Khalif Mashamaite, a member of this committee representing Limpopo.
Okay.
Good morning, Zukiswa Ranto from Eastern Cape, member of this committee.
Good morning, John Gunda, member of this committee, representing the Northern Cape, coming from the hottest place in this country, Apinja.
Good morning, my name is Sipo Plaiki, a member of this committee, representing the Northwest Province.
Good morning, my name is Michael De Villiers, coming from the Western Cape and also member of this committee.
Good morning, my name is Willem Faber, I'm from the Northern Cape Province and I represent the Select Committee.
I'm Vicky Sweater, TMG.
Manager in the office of the TMG.
Zuyanda Langa, secretary to the committee.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members, and thank you for extending the invitation to us. May I at the very outset convey the sincere apologies for the Minister. She would have been available, but because of the rescheduling of this event, she got tied down to other commitments which she was unable to break away from. She conveys the best wishes to you, Comrade Chair, as well as the members of the committee. Chairperson, you're quite right in the sense that I have the advantage of having served in the National Council of Provinces. I served in my capacity as Chief Whip of the institution, and I do know how it functions. I also see in your midst you have members who have basically served either at an executive level in the provincial legislature or as members of the provincial legislature. I think the approach that we would want to follow here, Chairperson, is really to say that the department represented by the acting director general would be making a full and comprehensive presentation. What I would like to stress really is, given the fact that there's a new paradigm to how we deal with things, the context under which we're going to be working in this administration in particular would be informed by the mandate of the ruling party, number one. Number two, the strategic priorities that have been identified in terms of education, on which there has been broad consultation and concurrence. There's an agreement. In other words, for the first time, we can say that the nation speaks with one voice in relation to the strategic priorities, whether it's early childhood development, whether it's the promotion of literacy and numeracy, whether it's the provision of resource books, whether it's teacher development, etc. Chair, you've also had the benefit of listening to the Director General in Higher Education and Training. I would have preferred it if you had started off with the Department of Basic Education, given the concurrent competency that concurrent powers that provinces have in relation to our schools. But it doesn't matter. I think it's also an important element because we have one system of education. But to say to you that the delineation of education between higher education and training and basic education obviously had its consequences and challenges, amongst which was to separate the functions of the two departments, although we are committed to one single system of education, to divide the personnel in the department and to reconfigure the department in a way that the structures of the department responds to and is consistent with the strategies that we have put in place. I'm not going to elaborate on the strategic priorities of the department. The DG would do so. He would elaborate it, on it, and it's been quite extensively consulted. He would also, I hope, in the context of his presentation, make some reference to the Vision 2025, My School Vision. I think it's important because that is really a comprehensive turnaround strategy for the department in terms of the system of education. So what the advantages that the department has in liaising with the provinces and with the National Council of Provinces in particular is that we have an institution that has a nexus, a link, with the provincial legislatures on the one hand and with the provincial executive on the other hand. It would mean that in terms of promoting and fostering and developing our priorities, we would be able to look to the National Council of Provinces and say to you that these are the challenges that we face in terms of implementation, and to what extent can you assist us in terms of providing the appropriate support, and also ensure that you monitor and evaluate the performance of provinces, because the performance of provinces vary because of the disproportionate nature of the development in the provinces. And I think the NCOP is appropriately placed to say that we've recognized the priorities, we recognize the allocation of resources to those priorities. We would assist you in monitoring and evaluating the performances of the provinces in achieving those particular outcomes that we've identified as government. So, Chair, really, I don't want to steal the thunder of the acting DG. We are very fortunate to have him and members of the senior management who are indeed very, very committed to the task at hand. So may I, with your kind permission, firstly say thank you again for the invitation extended to us, and secondly, to convey again the apology of the Minister, and thirdly, really, to hand over to the acting DG. I recognize the time constraints, and I would perhaps could request the DG not to be too quick and not to be too glib over the about what he's going to present to you, but at the same time to do so in a way that it allows for more time for engagement and discussion between ourselves and the esteemed members of the committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. We don't have a projection facility, so I'll be speaking to the hard copy. I trust all Honourable Members have a hard copy of the presentation. Thank you very much. I'll indicate which slide I'm on. But just by way of introduction, let me just echo the Deputy Minister's words that we are very grateful to be here to prepare the Select Committee for our budget vote. And in doing so, I'll be speaking to the presentation which summarizes what we intend to do as a department in this current financial year. And in doing that, I'll be speaking to our strategic plan, which I trust has been circulated to all Honourable Members, which details exactly how our money will be used. In addition, the other supporting document is the E&E for our department. So I'll then proceed with the presentation itself, going on to page 2 of the presentation. And essentially, my approach in trying to balance sufficient detail with speed is to go over 3 broad sections. The first one is part A, where I provide a high-level overview of the department's strategic plan, and that's essentially the document I've referred to. Part B is to speak about the strategic objectives and targets, so that members are aware of them ahead of the debate tomorrow. And then part C is the MTEF budget review, the 2010 budget review. If I can then, with your permission, proceed to part A, and that takes me to slide 4 of the hard copy of the presentation. And just to remind the Honourable Chair and Honourable Members that the aim of the department is to develop and maintain and support the South African school education system for the 21st century. This is significant, but it now delineates an aim for basic education, which is different from higher education and training, and this is a manifestation of the split that has taken place. We essentially focus on schools, and consequently the Minister's vision in prosecuting this aim is that all learners in South African schools have access to quality teaching and learning. Honourable Chair, that basically is what everything is all about. So what we put before you today is aimed at trying to achieve that, and our assessment of whether we succeed or not will be based on whether we can make that a reality. Now, Honourable Members will be aware that education has been identified as the apex priority by the executive, and in response to the President's call for action in his State of the Nation address, the Department has put together a strategic plan which is linked to what the Deputy Minister has introduced, which is Schooling 2025. With your permission, Honourable Chair, I just need to spend a moment to clarify that. We are tabling before you today our budget, which is a small proportion of what's spent on schooling or basic education in the country. However, our minister is expected to exercise leadership and stewardship over the system and is held in some way accountable for it. Therefore, we've got to ensure that how we use our budget, even though it's limited, and what we put in here has got an impact on the sector as a whole. And that's what the President has called for. And the way we've tried to do that is to look at how we can deal with the problems of intergovernment relations, of the problems of national setting priorities and provinces implementing. And the key difference this time, and the key instrument we seek to use, is the action plan, which we're calling Schooling 2025. Honourable members, for the first time now, we have a sector plan, which is not a sum of provincial plans. It's a plan, an integrated plan for the entire sector. It speaks to the priorities identified by the President and the Presidency, especially the Ministry in the Presidency, the Performance Monitoring and Evaluation Ministry, and it looks at concretely what the targets and interventions are to achieve those in the system. And for the first time, there will be mechanisms through which the National Minister can be supported and held accountable for the delivery and the achievement of these targets in the sector. And in keeping with that, Honourable Members, the targets for improvement of quality in basic education are on slide 5. It's improved national senior certificate examinations, high quality of teaching and learning through appropriate teacher development, improved literacy and numeracy at schools, especially as measured in grades 3, 6, 9, and grade 12 assessments, and then ECD. Those are the four key priorities and targets that have been set for the sector, and those are reflected in Schooling 2025. The key thing that the President raised with the sector was the challenge and government as a whole about the need to work differently. Now, how do we plan to work differently? It's summarized on slide 6. Firstly, we're adopting an outcomes-based planning approach, which has already been implemented and is given rise to the third draft or the current draft of Schooling 2025. And that essentially is about setting measurable outputs so that we speak in specific terms of what's to be achieved. The focus is on the entire sector, as I've indicated, and not 10 different departments. That's been the issue in the past, which has made it very difficult for us to succeed in implementing sector-wide change. There's a new system of performance management based on a performance agreement between the President and the Minister, and that will be cascaded throughout the sector. So those are three key things. If you go to slide 7, we continue there about how we'll be working differently. And in order to do what I indicated in the previous slide, specific institutional mechanisms are being established by the Presidency to promote outcomes-focused planning and performance management. Performance management is based on a sector-wide delivery agreement, which essentially is Schooling 2025 and a basic education delivery forum. Honourable Chair, again here, it's important to pause and just emphasize a few points here. The President has written a draft letter to the Minister, which will once finalized form the basis of his agreement with the Minister. That letter will be supported by what's called a delivery agreement, and that delivery agreement will contain targets for the entire sector, as I've said. The additional mechanism we are required to create, which is a delivery forum, and essentially that delivery forum seeks to achieve in one instance, an important instance, proper intergovernment relations and accountability. And therefore, the core of that delivery forum will be our MINMEC, or as we call it, the Council of Education Ministers. In addition to that, the Minister may add other role players to make the delivery forum a reality. That forum will report on and monitor progress in relation to these four outcomes, in specific terms as indicated in Schooling 2025, which is the delivery agreement. In addition, concrete mechanisms for working with and through province has become key to how we work now and work differently. It's already reflected in our organogram, in the way it's been restructured. In there, we seek to ensure that every aspect of what we do, from the structure to our activities, is aimed at working with and through provinces, because that's where the bulk of delivery happens. The last bullet there talks about an active focus on implementation through support, M&E, and accountability. And Honourable Chair, already there, the Minister has directed that we establish a delivery unit in the National Department, which should be a flexible unit made up of highly skilled, highly agile people who will go into provinces where we have challenges, try and problem solve the challenge. Their function is not M&E. That will be done by NIDU. Their function is to have a just-in-time intervention where there's a problem and try to problem solve it. For example, if the allocation of principals to schools aren't happening in a district. We found that just that thing can lead to grade 12 results coming down at the end of the year. We often pick it up too late because the district isn't reporting it. And that could be because of a problem of HR capacity. We will have in this unit HR capacity which we'll deploy. They won't have permanent functions in the National Department. There'll be people who, if necessary, will go to a province for 5 days. For example, in some provinces we find that the beginning of the year when they're supposed to do their post-provisioning norms, it's not done in accordance with requirements. That causes two problems. It upsets the unions and we have labor relations problems, and it causes a delay in the allocation of teachers. This unit will go in and support the province to actually do the post-provisioning norms. So that's the other innovation here. It's a delivery unit. It's something we've taken on board very strongly. It's something that's got some global experience in implementation, and it's something which the presidency has recommended. We've looked at it. We felt it makes a lot of sense. The minister has directed that we implement it, and we're implementing it with key people. It will be a small unit that can draw on anybody and everybody in the department, and it can also draw on people outside. Outside, we'll draw on other provinces. For example, some provinces have good people in the area of EMIS or labor relations. We'll draw on them and take them to another province. Or we'll draw on people based at universities or NGOs. It's just trying to create that flexibility and agility to intervene in time. Honourable members, if I can then go to Part B, which is a detailed presentation on objectives. And here now I begin to speak very specifically about our vote. That's the Department of Basic Education vote, which is the subject of the debate tomorrow. Key objectives, activities, and targets. Firstly, is to improve curriculum implementation based on the curriculum review. It's an integrated strategy on learner assessments linked to the curriculum. Integrated plan for teacher development following the Teacher Development Summit and based on the quality learning and teaching campaign. The distribution of workbooks, and you'll see allocations made to the department for the acquisition, development of those workbooks and its distribution. Enhance education management development capacity within the system. Enhance pro-poor packages. It's an important thing. One of the big challenges in our country continues to be the difference in funding between rich and poor, essentially because despite the state's efforts to direct more money towards the poor, income inequality in the country allows richer parents to finance even higher levels of education provision for their children, and continues to replicate the disparities in the country. If you continue to page slide 10, establishing a long-term sector action plan, which is Schooling 2025. I repeat again, this is one of our key instruments to address the challenges of the past, where we've had the disjuncture between national policy and implementation at the provincial level. Better assessment and reporting on the state of basic education. And yes, when NIDU comes in, NIDU is operational at the moment. Offices have been allocated. Recruitment is underway. The final announcements will be made shortly. Initial plan is on the table in terms of what it will do. The process is set in place for it to develop a long-term plan. Currently, it will administratively report to the DG, but report substantively to the minister. And in time, there will be a review as to whether its location would be better served, where its aim would be better served if it's outside the department. But NIDU is functioning, it will play a critical role there. And then e-education, again, is critical because of the fact that this is what the global dynamic is all about. But also we feel that what e-education offers us are opportunities and solutions to some of our great needs of provision. For example, libraries and the challenge of libraries. if you have a good e-education strategy, you can actually deliver information services much more efficiently. And that's why e-learning is an important thing. Then, honorable members, if you look at the next slide on page 11, that speaks to our programs in the E&E, and again, I refer you to the chapter on basic education in the E&E. And what you see on page 11 is our program structure. It's administration, curriculum policy support and monitoring, teachers and education, human resources, development and management, planning quality assessment and monitoring and evaluation, and social responsibility. Those are our five programs. Now, if we go on each of the programs briefly, Honorable Chair, I'm aware of time, so I'm going to go quite quickly. If it's too fast, please stop me, and then I'll go into more detail. But this program is intended to ensure long-range planning, promote international relations, legislation, monitoring and evaluation of provincial education departments, and sector-wide communication. In terms of Program 2, curriculum, policy, support, and monitoring. Again, here, honorable members, the key thing is that given the separation, the executive following the decisions of the ruling party felt that in order to ensure that basic education is a priority, there needs to be the split. And in splitting it, we need to make sure that the key things that one needs to do in basic education is done and is expressed in our structure. And the two key things are curriculum and teacher development, teachers. And you'll therefore see that there are two branches devoted to this, each one dealing with curriculum and teacher development respectively. On curriculum, the ministers asked that we separate the function between policy, review, assessment, analysis, and implementation support. And you'll see in our program that that's indeed what we've done. And the objective there is to expand access to quality ECD for poor communities, improve quality of teaching and learning from grade R to 12, provide workbooks and textbooks from grade R to 12, improve access of education of quality to learners, expand provision of basic literacy, appropriate LTSM, monitor and evaluate literacy programs, improve capacity to review and implement curriculum, and support curriculum delivery. Again, here what runs through these objectives is the emphasis on education quality outcomes. If you go to Program 3 then, Teacher and Education, Human Resources Development and Management, again, it's to develop and implement a national HR planning framework, promote effective teacher professional development, manage teacher supply and demand, maintain norms and standards, teacher appraisal system, performance-based contracts for principals, and strengthen and formalize training of education managers. Honorable members, let me emphasize this point here. The teachers are our key resource. The bulk of our money is spent on teachers. And those objectives we've identified there are critical objectives for us. We are determined to ensure that this year we implement a credible teacher development program. We've been working very hard with the unions. We've got a large degree of consensus following the teacher summit. And we're quite confident that even on issues of teacher appraisal, teacher accountability, we are making progress there. And we're hoping that teacher capability can be impacted on positively. Slide 15 continues with teachers. It's to create a positive framework and maintain favorable conditions of service, ensure effective professional leadership at district level, increase the number and quality of new teachers, and provide practicing teachers and curriculum leaders with support. So that's essentially, in summary, what we'll do there. And even though I've covered it very briefly, I need to emphasize that it's a very, very important area. Program 4 then on planning, quality assessment and monitoring and evaluation. Again, here, this branch deals with planning, it deals with reporting, and reporting is a critical element of what we're doing differently. It's to implement and report on the, implement and report on the implementation of education information policy, develop and maintain an integrated education management information system, develop systems and procedures to support education policy, plan and monitor equitable distribution of education, develop, implement, and monitor strategy for improved adequate facilities and infrastructure. Honorable members, on infrastructure, that has been identified as a key intervention for schooling 2025. you would have heard the minister's comments already that if we carry on with the current budgets, our backlog that requires about 140 billion rand to eliminate will take many, many years. And consequently, we're developing an accelerated infrastructure delivery program. What's different about it? Two things are different. One is the prioritization about addressing the most critical schools through proper planning and innovative building approaches is the one thing that's different. But the bigger thing is that we're introducing an innovative funding mechanism. In discussion with the National Treasury, there's been agreement that we could use the DBSA, Development Bank of South Africa's facility, whereby the infrastructure budgets over a number of years can be made available over 2 or 3 years. We can use the momentum for the World Cup construction to actually try and eliminate as far as possible the most pressing backlogs now. That's different. That's a key thing. Quite a bit of work has been done already on that. And honorable members, we'd welcome the opportunity to come back to this select committee to report on this issue of infrastructure and some of the other key interventions that we are implementing with provinces to make sure that Schooling 2025 is implemented. Of course, budgeting remains critical and to implement an integrated system of learner assessment. It continues on page 18, this program on planning is to improve quality assurance and summative school-based assessment, is to promote accountability for overall quality in basic education, is to promote and undertake the monitoring and evaluation and reporting of the schooling system, and is to promote research coordination. If you go to program 5, honorable members, again, social responsibility, a lot of people tend to think it's a luxury. We don't share that view. In South Africa, given our history of poverty and given continuing levels of poverty and income inequality, this is critical. It's critical not only from a humanitarian point of view, but it's critical because these issues affect schooling outcomes very fundamentally, health levels, poverty levels. And therefore, the work in this program is important. And here we try to ensure that schools are the center of community life, that it's a societal matter, as the President has called for. And what we seek to do here is to mobilize key stakeholders through a social contract, implement school safety measures, improve arts, culture, facilitate implementation of physical education, and promote mass participation in school, increase knowledge and awareness of healthy lifestyles, contribute to enhanced teaching and learning through school feeding programs. One of our very successful programs is the school nutrition program. Ensure that gender-related barriers in the schooling system are reduced. Even though we've done well on gender participation, there are serious gender issues in the system that needs to be addressed that affects not only the experience of girl learners, but also the outcomes. Improve the quality of teaching and learning in rural and farm schools. Then, honorable members, if you then look at page 21, that's where we present our operational plan and our budget, and I'm going to go over that very quickly. These are items that are in our E&E, and if you go to page 23, we need to emphasize the point that the department was established when the Department of Education was split. And essentially, when the Department of Education was split into two, the budget was also split into two. So we had to manage with a budget that was first intended for one department, and now the budget is intended for two departments. Those budgets are allocated to the operations, which makes sense, but some things were unavoidable. We had to replicate certain functions which in law we're required to do, like finance, procurement, HR, and so forth. And that has put pressure on us, so we're feeling some of the pressure, but we've tried to manage the budget as best we can, and you'll see when I speak to that later. So if you go to page 24, it speaks about how we split the funding, and I'm sure having had the benefit of higher education and training's presentation, that matter has been clarified, but I could speak to that if members have any questions. We do make the point on page 24 that we will no doubt experience some budget constraints in 2010 and 11, but we seek to manage that. We're also in discussion with Treasury. And if necessary, in the adjustments, we'll be making an appeal to Treasury. But certainly, if you look at the budget in terms of what we've allocated, we have tried to ensure that all our objectives receive money that would allow us to achieve those objectives. Then if you go to page 25, we again just confirm the process. We speak about earmark funds. Oh, sorry, the DM just reminded me that you've got slides, so I'm going to refer to slide 25. So slide 25, we speak about commitments there. I won't go into details. If honorable members go to slide 26, that's where our allocations are. You will see that in the first column, we've got an amount, a total amount, even after the efficiency savings of 6.1 billion. That's up from 3.9 billion in 2009 and 10, which you'll see in the next slide, 27. And that gives you a sense of the allocation. You will see for national assessments, we've got an allocation of 10, 8, and 10 million. New building projects, 30, 32, and 34 million. That's our current building. Workbooks, very healthy allocations going forward, and the adjustment for compensation of employees. And then school nutrition and dinner lady schools. If you go to slide 27, you will see there the actual amounts, and we'll respond to questions there. Program 5, social responsibility, has got very high amounts. Those are essentially earmarked funds and conditional grants. Those are not funds that the department itself expends on its objectives. It's funds that it expends on behalf of provinces or transfers directly to provinces. And that accounts for the largest portion of our budget, in fact. Under administration, you will see the 149 million there and 252 million 2010-11. That's largely on account of the new building that we've moved into. It's a PPP. It covers maintenance and construction costs and facilities management. And the large amount there is essentially to pay for that building. Page 28 gives you a multi-year breakdown of our budget. And you will see, Honorable Chair, fairly decent growth over the MTEF to our baseline. But again, to emphasize the point that Program 5 is largely earmarked funds and conditional grants, and Program 2, that large amount in Program 2 includes the workbooks. And again, that's intended for provinces. If you go to slide 29, that gives you a sense of the allocations by classification, economic classification. And you will see in terms of compensation of employees, 17.6%, which is good by any measure. One doesn't want to spend too much on compensation. If you look at transfers and subsidies, third line from the bottom in the table, you will see that that accounts for 42% of our budget there of goods and services, and it's 3 billion in 2009 and 10 and 4.3 billion. In 2010 and 11. So between transfers and subsidies and the workbooks, we account for the large proportion of our budget. Page 30, again, confirms the details I've spoken to in terms of a multi-year breakdown. And then if you go to slide 31, allocation summary for 2010 and 11 compared to 2009-10, gives you a sense of how things have changed over the two periods of time. And again, the largest growth is on account of earmark funds, the workbooks, transfers to provinces, and so forth. And the other area of growth has got to do with our new building. We believe that if you look at the earmark funds, honorable members, it does confirm that the budget allocations have spoken to the priorities within basic education. That's our view. On page 32, it gives you a sense of the allocation over the 2010 MTEF. And again, you see there that it's a fairly healthy growth, but the picture that we concerned about a bit is third row from the bottom is departmental operations, 65 million, 68 million, and 71 million. We've had to cut considerably on that amount. Those are very, very small amounts. And it does raise challenges for us in terms of how we implement our program. But clearly, as I said, there are other allocations there that speak to the priorities, and we'll have to look at implementing them strategically. Page 33 then speaks about earmark funds, honorable members, And there you see a very nice breakdown about what goes where. Karigure, a large portion, workbooks, NIDU gets 11 and 12 million rand, respectively, over the MTEF. The IQMS, which is a system through which we visit schools in the country, IMS development, national assessments get 10, 8, and 10 million. And that gives you a sense of what constitutes a large proportion of our budget. And then under that is conditional grants, and there we have 4 conditional grants. The biggest one is the school nutrition program, 3.6 billion, 4.5 billion, and 4.9 billion over the MTEF, with good coverage of poor schools, and but it accounts for a large proportion of our budget. And then allocations and transfers we give in 34, those are the payments that the department makes out towards CETA, UNESCO, Commonwealth of Learning, ADIA, Childline, etc. And then transfers to public entities is given on page 34. Funza Lushaka, also a large amount of money that goes out there. Honourable Chairperson, I've tried to do the presentation within half an hour. I want to conclude now by saying that we do anticipate budget constraints, but we will seek to optimize the quality of spending. There's pressure throughout government at the moment. We acknowledge that. We do feel that our priorities have received allocations. However, there are constraints that we've spoken to, and we will seek to manage that. We do believe then that the establishment of a dedicated basic education department, coupled with a new approach to delivery, marks a decisive shift away from business as usual. If you go to slide 36, we are confident that the sector-wide outcomes-based planning, sector-wide performance management and accountability, strong focus on implementation, monitoring and support, a strong focus on working with and through provinces, all constitute different ways of working which will certainly help us to deliver results. I would conclude at that point, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you.
I'm just going to allow members to interact with the presentation, to raise questions. I'll start from the side, Honourable Mube, Honourable Blackie, Honourable Divya, and Honourable Scotsman. You will take the second slide. Members, I'm going to put that when I give members a chance, when you raise after members, other members have raised, I'll give you an opportunity in the second round. Please.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Chairperson, my first question will be, what normally happens when a province has overspent? For instance, there is a question of KZN overspend in education, and then there's an allocation 2010-11. Do they pay for those? But what normally happens, and how do we care? What are the measures? Because when Treasury raises these things, it means there has to be improvement. And what happens on those programs that are supposed to be implemented this year and find that there's an overspending? Secondly, is it might be said in the stress plan, but it's not of it. There is a high learner pregnancy rate in some of the schools in Gauteng. Example is in Tembisa. It looks as if they compete. I'm not sure in terms of the interaction of what is there any program in terms of, we used to have nurses and whatever, because it might not be teachers may not have confidence in educating girls or boys about contraceptives and all those things. The other one is on the grant on technical schools. Recap. You talk of 2010 starting from 80 million up to 210,000 million, and it depends. It will depend on the province giving you the plan. And I'm coming from a province, Gauteng, where there has been a lot of technical high schools and or comprehensive. I don't know whether comprehensive schools they fall under technical high, where educators were trained. I'm sure after the VHAM report, educators were trained, and comprehensive schools built with equipment, workshops. But now the white elephants and the community helping themselves with those, and those subjects are no longer taught. I'm not sure in terms of if provinces are not responding, how should the stakeholders ensure that they interact with provinces so that those comprehensive schools that get benefit out of this grant. So we would also like to, as a select committee, to have the audit that you've done, because you talk of the audit done in 2009, so that you can then be able, as we do oversight, to make follow-ups with the provinces. The other one is on farm schools.
Let's see that, so that all members should have an opportunity for questions. Maybe we should restrict that to that, so that we get another opportunity and allow the department to be able to respond to the questions. Just note other questions for the second round, so that I think it will be easier that way. And I have a blanket.
Yeah, Chair, I will avoid to repeat some of the questions you raised and go straight to about some question that I want to ask the department. One is on the basis of the response of the minister in a debate, last debate, in the MCOP when we were debating on education matter. She indicated that the black education, it is in serious crisis. We should not confuse it with that the entire education system is in crisis. But what I want to check with the department, noting and actually identifying that the problem is mostly in the black education system, what is the immediate program that is put in place to make sure that they address this problem? And the second question, I wanted to check with the deputy minister, that is the provinces consistent with their submission of quarterly reports? I meant to understand that submission of quarterly report is actually an essence of violation of the Public Financial Management Act. If not, what are the department doing to ensure that all the provinces submit in time report as prescribed by the Act? And the last question, I said 3, Chairperson, is on the observation of the 2008-2009 financial year, that the department has actually allocated 8.4 million on the program of the IQMS. What I want to check is this IQMS, does it heal the desired result by the department, or is it just a fruitless expenditure that is given to this program of integrated quality management system? That's a question that I wanted to pose.
Thank you, Chairperson. In a previous select committee, especially the YAF one, the minister make an example about the training of nurses at universities. Now, I think we have the same problem of training of teachers at universities. Now, what is the situation in the department about the opening of colleges, not in all the provinces, but in certain places maybe? Because from my experience, you get the better education to educate learners at the colleges. So somebody who comes from the university must actually now come and learn at school how to educate the learners. The second one, Honorable Chairperson, is about the salaries of the ECD teachers. Now, we know that if you want to attract the better people to these centers, we must actually look at the salaries of those teachers. Because you can only better the education of learners if you start from that foundation upwards. The other one, I see that the improvement of teacher quality, there's a real change of minus 17.2% in the budget. Now, I'm actually worried about that. If we want to better the quality of teachers, then I believe that we must actually make more money available to educate to educate the quality of teachers on that stage. And on slide 5, the last one, on slide 5, Honorable Chairperson, maybe I'm wrong. If you can see under the strategic outputs which are central for improvement quality of basic education. Now, the first one is senior certificate examination, and the last one is early childhood development. Maybe I'm wrong. I think the sequence of that must be first early childhood and then the others must follow. Maybe the department can answer me on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got two questions. I'm going to first start. It's almost similar to what my colleagues got to say here, and that's on the qualifications and performance of teachers. I think that should be directly connected to salary. If you've got a very good qualified science, maths teacher that's got a HOD or which got a master's degree, etc., that person should be remunerated accordingly. That's how you're going to get that person to actually give better quality education. So I believe we must look at qualifications of teachers. And we've got a lot of postgraduates, people that are going out of education because they don't get paid well. But they're more than qualified, and they can actually help us on this. So I believe we must give people performance bonuses and as well as grade them according to their qualifications. Then a thing that worries me a lot, on page 26 we look at new building projects, 2011, 12, 30, 30, 32 and 34, and then as well on this last page 33 we've got a new office building of on the year 2010, 11, 126 million, then 132 million, then 138 million. I just want to know how that fits in with education, and shouldn't that be part of public works on buildings? I mean, shouldn't we spend money on teaching children and on education instead of buildings? I'm not sure if that fits in together, if I can be helped by the department. Thank you.
Thank you. Which areas are targeted for the expansion of no-fee schools over the MPEF process? And also on the ICT, the development of ICT schools, which areas are targeted here? Over to MT. Thanks.
Over to the department.
Yeah, thank you very much. The acting DG has suggested that I just deal with some of the issues, and obviously he's going to augment in terms of detail in areas that fall within his peculiar knowledge. Let's just look at the issues raised by Honorable Pinky with regard to the issue of over expenditure. How do we curb? Well, you know, firstly, that links up with your quarterly reports that have to be submitted in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. That's a question of monitoring that particular process. What we can say to you is that the Department of Education, National Department, provides support constantly to the provincial departments in terms of the management of resources. And one of the key challenges that provinces have in terms of their CFOs, who are not adequately, in some instances, adequately equipped to manage their budgets, create problems of this particular nature of either under or over expenditure. Therefore, although constitutionally and legally we're not obliged to do so,
we make it our responsibility to do so, and we also have a report that is submitted to the Ministry and to the Director General on a regular basis, reflecting the expenditure trends. Beyond that, we take that report and we submit it to the Council of Education Ministers so that the MECs for Education are aware of the expenditure trends in each one of the dedicated areas. So what I'm indicating to you is that the monitoring and evaluation that takes place constantly, in addition to the PMFA requirements, there is support that is provided by the National Department, and there is information that is passed on and discussed with the MECs for Education in the CEM Council of Education Ministers meeting. Secondly, with regard to the learner pregnancy, it's a matter of great concern to us, but perhaps just to share with you two interesting observations. One was in a study undertaken by the Department of Social Development. There was an allegation to the effect, and MEC Hasmeni is nodding her head because she's fully aware of it, that there is a correlation between the child grant and pregnancy. Quite interestingly, the report, which was carried out quite very independently of the Department of Social Development, came to the conclusion that there is absolutely no correlation between the child grant and teenage pregnancy. The second is a recently, and certainly we would like to share that with the Select Committee, a recently completed report, also undertaken independently, with regard to teenage pregnancy. And quite amazingly, and I must say, I indeed was surprised when I listened very attentively to the presentation and both to the content of the report, that rather than an increase in teenage pregnancy, there has been a reduction in teenage pregnancy. So it's a phenomenon that basically confronts us. But what we cannot deny is that teenage pregnancy itself does create an aberration. It's a distraction and a deviation, and it does hamper the opportunities of learners. So it's something that we have to strengthen. It would mean, and as the Honourable Member has said, that what are we doing in terms of our programs within life skills and life orientation? To what extent do we develop capacity of educators to be able to ensure that they are able to communicate? Is it better, and these questions must be asked, to have an environment where male teachers speak to male learners and female teachers speak to female learners, particularly in areas of that are sensitive, the transmission of sexually transmitted diseases, etc., and how do we connect that with your broader program of HIV and AIDS? With regard to the third element that you raised, the honourable member, the technical schools, I think it's a great start and it's been celebrated by the principals of technical schools. We had a meeting about 2 years ago. In fact, it's not a new initiative. Where the concern was that the technical schools have what you've referred to, equipment that is somewhat outdated and obsolete, and some of it is that there is insufficient funding for these technical schools, with the result is you have the white elephant phenomenon where you've created, established a technical school, which is not a comprehensive school, but a technical school, but you are unable to provide the facilities. Now, we've identified 200 schools countrywide, and based on the programs, there is going to be a recapitalization in the funding. And I think it's a very, very positive start, particularly in the light of the fact that we are trying to develop these artisanal skills amongst our learners, and also at the same time allow them the opportunity to proceed further, progress further academically. So it's not an FET college, but it's a technical school located within communities, accessible, and we do have those skills available. With regard to the last element, and I think the chair basically told you, gone far enough, it was about farm schools, I think what the chair, what you were probably going to ask, is the phenomenon of farm schools that are too small, or where there is multi-grade teaching taking place. How are we addressing it? We're saying that multi-grade teaching certainly is not beneficial to learners. It requires extraordinary skills on the part of the educators. And we are moving, I think, quite successfully in some provinces in two significant ways. One is the merger of schools. So rather than having three small schools, you merge them and have a quality school. And the second is the establishment of hostels. The Northwest, for example, and the Free State have some good examples of how hostels can work in those particular environments. Mr. Plyke, with regard to your comment, and thank you for that, what the minister was saying is indeed correct, is that we can't ignore the issues of equity, because equity means many things. It means access to opportunity. It means equitable resources, it means quality assurance, it means
teacher provisioning. It means that the entire range, the entire bouquet of services that you require for quality education is certainly lacking in Black communities. The realities and the objective realities are that you have overcrowding, schools are under-resourced, they don't have libraries, they don't have laboratories, many schools are without sanitation and electricity. These are certainly, and we're not harkening on the apartheid past, but these are the realities of our, the legacy of our past. And these are things that we have to address, and therefore, the position of the department and the ministry is really to ensure that we have pro-poor funding, that we adequately resource, and indeed, I think the DG would want, I would like him to elaborate also on the new, he alluded to it in his presentation, but the new approach with regard to infrastructure. How we're not going to say that's a matter for public works, but looking at an innovative way of developing it and through with in partnership with the Development Bank of South Africa and Treasury, etc. But he will elaborate on that. With regard to the quarterly reports, I think Mr. Plaike, I've reflected on that, and certainly is a requirement of the PMFA. With regard to IQMS and the expenditure is there, we can't simply dispose of IQMS. But what the debate that is taking place now and the discussion within the Council of and amongst the members of the Council of Education Ministers is that given the fact that you're going to have this National Education Evaluation Unit, given the fact that you are now moving towards performance orientation from the President to the Ministers downwards, should we integrate your IQMS with your NEDU unit? Or alternatively, if we don't do so, should we look at a new approach towards the IQMS, which is performance-linked? In other words, do you compensate and reward educators on the basis of their performance in the classroom, rather than saying you just automatically are entitled to an entitlement to of better remuneration? Mr. de Villiers, you raised issues about universities, the colleges. We firstly, with regard to the issues of mentors and coaching, we believe it's quite important. It's going to become an integral part of both preset and inset training. We believe that you find contradictions. For example, you might find a learner a student that is adequately qualified theoretically, but has no sense of the classroom environment. And you must remember that in our new phase, we are no longer homogeneous communities. We have diversity in our communities in terms of language, in terms of culture, in terms of religion. The appropriate skills that are required in that environment are far greater than the skills that were required yesteryear in a homogeneous environment. Teachers were from the same community, the same faces, they knew the parents, they knew the grandparents, one language being spoken. And now suddenly you have this phenomenon of migration, the change in classroom composition, there's a change in curriculum, and the challenges are incredible. And therefore you require that additional support. We say that there were reasons why colleges were closed. Some of them were very functional and very effective. Others were really just in providing inferior quality education. But we think the conversation has, in fact, conversation has already started in terms of how we can utilize our FET colleges in a way that could provide both inset and preset training. Somebody raised the issues of practitioners for ECD, for example. I think it was Mr. Willem, you did as well. Why should they travel to a university for training when you can have an FET college where you could have experienced, qualified people training them on site so that it does not deviate and distract them from their actual work? So these are conversations that are taking place and in fact form part of the composite strategy of teacher development and forms part of your 2025 schooling vision that the DG spoke about. With regard to the 17.2 reduction, I'm not too aware of, the DG will deal with it, but I also want you to take into account that there is a Funza Lushaka allocation, which provides an enormous amount of money, fully funded bursaries, for teachers, and in fact the uptake has been quite phenomenal amongst those who are entering university and amongst those who have already graduated and now want to take teaching as a profession. Interestingly, I might share with you is that a teacher, a newly qualified teacher, occupies more than an occupational therapist or a speech therapist. It's quite phenomenal. Their courses are 4 years, more intensive than teaching course, and yet the teacher earns, is commencing salary more than a health professional. Contradiction in my view, but I think teachers must look at it very closely and say, well, you know, well, what is it that we're doing right or wrong? With regard to slide 5, you are absolutely right. The sequence is wrong, but if you look at your 10-point plan, you see it starts off with ECD, early childhood development, and that indeed is. It's just a question of an enumeration, tabulation of the elements, but not in a particular sequence of priority. So we recognize the fact that you cannot basically change the system of education unless you focus principally on early childhood development, because that is where the cognitive development takes place, and if we deal with that in a significant way, then we would be able to bring about change. With regard to Mr. Willem, is it Willem? Is it, am I correct? Willem. The qualifications, just to share with you, we've already amended the Act. So if you teach in a rural area, you're entitled to a reward. If you teach in scarce skill areas such as mathematics, science, accountancy, and languages, you are entitled to an additional reward. So that's the one part of it. So your rewards and incentives are provided in terms of the legislation and in terms of the OSD. Secondly, we've also changed the law to the effect in such a significant way that you have career development that takes place through in the classroom. So an educator today with experience, qualification, and competency could earn the equivalent of an official who is in the Department of Education without having to leave the classroom. So you don't have to become a principal, deputy principal, or a system manager in order to earn a better remuneration. So we've created a career path within the classroom so those who are competent and capable of teaching would remain in the classroom but earn the same or equivalent remuneration whilst in the classroom. So these, this is what's going to happen. It's already happened because it speaks to precisely what you have raised as a concern. With regard to the new building, just to say very briefly, and the DG would want to expand on it, it's a public-private partnership. It's over a period of 25 years. If you look at the building, you say, wow, I'm so glad we have that. We just had, in a very short space of time, the Council of Education Ministers meeting taking place on that site over there. We've had another event that took place on the site. Dinner was provided at the site there, and already we've saved thousands upon thousands of rents because the facility is appropriate, and it's really conducive to an educational institution. This is maintenance-free over 25 years through a partnership. After 25 years, it becomes the property of the Department of Education. But if you look at it, and we would like to extend an invitation to the Select Committee just to visit the site, and you would really see what an impact it makes on it. This site is available to the National Department and also to the sister departments, as well as the MECs in the provinces. And in fact, they're quite excited about it. They said, why didn't this happen sooner rather than later? So in real terms, it would amount to a saving. With regard to Ms. Nomonde Khosmani, the issues about the no-fee schools, we basically covered the base of quintile 1, 2, and 3. So your most poor, your very poor, and your poor schools are covered. We want to, many of the quintile 4 schools, which were previously in the more middle-class and affluent areas, there's been a dramatic change in the learner population over there. Some of them are near informal settlements, others as a result of migration, now have more poorer schools, and the MECs are looking at a review of the quintile on the one hand, and there is a new funding model, which is pro-poor, that is being developed that deals with the realities of learner populations rather than infrastructure in the surrounding communities, because a lot of people are being bused to schools, and that's the reality. So when we look at our funding norms and standards, we can't look at the surrounding community and say, well, this is an affluent community, when 80% or maybe 70% of the children are being bused from a township to that particular school. So that has evolved, and obviously the department is responding to that. The ICT thing, Ms. Khosmani, I'm glad you're raising this. It's perhaps one area where we have to work extremely hard. And what we can share with you is that we're engaged with the Department of Communications, Department of Science and Technology, and with the service providers. We're saying, look, please don't give us pilots. Because what they've been doing is that they choose a pilot school here in this district, a pilot school in another school district. We say, do an entire district. Mm-hmm. So you cover thousands of schools within that district. So the issues of connectivity for education, for health, etc., is covered in that particular area. Because the challenge is not really to get a computer into the school, quite honestly. The challenge is how do you have interactive, how do you have connectivity to the schools so that the learners can basically utilize the ICT in a way that is optimal so that they can access information and do the appropriate research. And certainly the focus is on rural schools. In terms of the plan that we have, and the DG might want to expand on it, certainly we are moving much, much quicker to where we want to get. And I do believe that is one area where, if at all, because we're not, you see, the education department can buy the computers, can train the educators. So if you tell me, have you trained your educators, I can tell you yes. We've trained more than 170,000 educators in terms of ICT computer proficiency. If you ask me, what about laptops for teachers, I can say to you that every single teacher in the system is entitled to a subsidized laptop.
Wow.
But that is the reality as we speak right now. If you tell me what is the position with regard to Gauteng in the Western Cape, I will tell you in terms of Gauteng, more than 70% of the schools have connectivity, and with regard to the Western Cape, more than 80%. But can I say the same about Limpopo? Can I say the same about... No, I can't. And that is where our challenge is, and that is why we've got to look at things differently over here. And because we are dependent on the Department of Communications, we are working extremely hard in ensuring that we provide them with, you know, well, get them to move faster on this year so that we can get the connectivity element put in place into our schools as quickly as possible. But we're not holding back in terms of training and development in this particular area. Chair, I'm sorry, I didn't want to treat any of the questions lightly. I thought they were very, very important questions, and maybe the DG wants to add. I probably have taken a lot of what he wanted to say, but please, DG.
Thanks very much, Honourable Chair. The DM's covered most of the questions, so I'll just fill in some of the issues that I need to from an administrative point of view. Starting with Ms. Mube's first question, it's a critical question. And I think the NCOP must also try to assist us with that, because what tends to happen is, you're right, when a provincial education department overspends in the last financial year, when they get into a new, they immediately take that out. So you already start with a deficit. And then the next year you're going to another deficit. And we're sitting with that problem. Now last financial year, we sat with a double combined problem. One was the financial crisis and pressure on budgets and OSD together. So we're sitting with that, and KZN is carrying that burden. Many provinces are carrying it. We're working very hard with the Treasury to try and address that issue, but it is a problem. And in those instances, Honourable Member, it's not entirely the fault of the province. There are instances, though, where it's the fault of the province in terms of bad budgeting, bad spending, and then they face the consequences of that. So we're trying to talk to Treasury to say you can't punish a department for something that's not their fault, especially if it's got multi-year implications. So you've put your finger on it, and I think we need to talk further about how we need to intervene there and assist. In terms of, the DM answered the other questions there. In terms of the Mr. Plyke's question, again, the Minister did indeed say that the crisis is with black education. And there, Mr. de Villiers, it's a multiplicity of interventions, raising from how do you compensate for the financial shortcomings that's faced in the schools? How do you cater for the functionality issues? How do you cater for teacher professionalism and competence, which really in those schools that we're trying to target are the bigger problem? How do you deal with the fact that districts that are supposed to support poor schools are in fact the districts that are weak compared to the districts that support good schools, like Patang Girls High? It's a good district, but really you don't need a district there, a district support facility. So we're trying to bring those things together in addressing this question. So it's a combination of funding, pedagogic, management, accountability, community involvement. I mean, the quality learning and teaching campaign is critical in these areas. And what we're doing there is communities have been telling us, we walk past the school and we see learners walking around at 10 o'clock. We complain to the district, nothing happens. We think to the QLTC, you won't only complain to the district, you'll have a direct line to us so that we can intervene, give communities the confidence to know that when they complain, something actually happens and gets done. So it's a combination of those issues that we've got to address. But from a measurement point of view, we're not going to measure only aggregate results, whether it's grade 3, 6, 9, or 12. We're going to measure aggregate, but we're going to measure what's happening in that bottom level of results so that we can track this crisis and make sure we're impacting on it positively. The other issues the Deputy Minister's covered there,
In terms of Mr. de Villiers, you raise a very important issue around ECD teachers. We, in fact, in policy, there's two options at the moment. The state can employ the educators in grade R. We're responsible only for grade R. Or they can go to a community site. And I think that's what you're referring to. If they're in a community site, they get paid anything from bad to very bad. If they're in a school site, state employees, they get paid well. Our strategy, our objective is to ensure that increasingly the bulk are in state schools with state-employed educators, so that we can have that kind of payment that you're talking about. And you're absolutely right. I must say, Honourable Member, I couldn't find the reduction of 17.2%. So if I can just check with you which part of the presentation. Sorry, through you, Honourable Chair. I say with embarrassment that I couldn't find it. So if I'll continue then. It's okay. Thank you very much for that. And the Deputy Minister has covered the question on slide 5. Mr. Faber, just to confirm, was it Faber, sorry. the Deputy Minister has reported that, you know, that was one of the big policy changes we tried to introduce, was to make sure that, you know, today if you're a good science teacher, you can earn more than the principal by not leaving your classroom at all. You can earn more than a principal of a big school by not leaving your classroom at all, as a state-paid teacher. Also with OSD, we've tried to create compensation to keep teachers. I must say, to confirm what the DM has said, this OSD deal has been excellent for teachers. The union told me the other day in confidence, you know, we really did well in that deal. So we've really tried to compensate for teachers. And we're saying to unions, please come back and now respond in terms of what we've done as a state. Show us what you're going to do now. Just again to add to the new building issue, Mr. Faber, what happened a few years ago is that the budget for our accommodation was on public works budget. I suspect that's what you're talking about. Now it's changed. The budgets for all buildings are on the department's budget, so that you can see. So it's still, you know, in Treasury's mind, it's still public works activity, but they put the money onto our budget now. That's why you see it there. So that's the reason why it's there. But you're right, our focus should be on education. It is. But from an accounting point of view, the accountants felt for good reason put it under each department so that you can see what each department is spending. Because before it was a global finger on public works. So you couldn't tell exactly where the money was. So that's the shift that has taken place. And Mr. Khasmani, I was going to pronounce your surname Rasmani. I heard the Deputy Minister say Khasmani. I hope that's correct. I hope I'm correct here. You know, this is an important area of policy, as the Deputy Minister has indicated. We, through research and through input, and I think even in this select committee, there was a question about the quintile system and its failings and how it's not working. We're reviewing that completely. We're moving into a fee and no fee category. And the no fee category is essentially the old quintiles 1, 2, and 3, because we found that they're all poor. And we're trying to ensure that they all get that no-fee amount. And that links to Mr. de Villiers' question. It's essentially schools that doesn't have the financial capacity. We're making them no-fee and giving them the allocation, but also trying to ensure that not only are they no-fee, but that the amount of money they get is adequate. And then the Deputy Minister has covered the ICT thing. It's about with communications, the connectivity. Mm-hmm. It's about how well we use the teacher laptop initiative. It's an important initiative. We're trying to ensure that the teachers don't just get a laptop, but they get content loaded onto the laptop, and they get trained on how to use those laptops. So this is an important development. Honourable Chair, I think I've tried to fill in the gaps there from an administrative point of view.
Mayor, with your permission, just raise two things. One with regard to ECD, early childhood development.
Sorry, Honourable Deputy Minister, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, Honourable Chairperson, I just want to say it's on slide 27, 17.7%.
That's in fact an increase, an increase of 17.7%. Yeah. Sorry, we said the increase slash decrease. If it's a decrease, it'll be minus 17. So our apologies. That's what it indicates. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chair, just to say that the two important things with regard to ECD. For the first time, we have a national curriculum standard throughout the country for grade R.
Okay.
And for the first time, we can celebrate that every learner in a great art, that's attending great art in our public institutions, in our schools, has received a resource pack with a teacher guide. This has been distributed countrywide to all the schools. And we have about 650,000 learners in grade R. So in all 11 languages, this activity book plus a teacher's guide and assessment guide has been distributed as a resource pack. If you look at it, you say, wow, you know, something's really happening there. And certainly what we're looking towards is basically doing your foundation phase and any other classes so that the activity books, the workbooks that are being spoken about, do indeed take place there. Let me just leave it that with regard to grade R, and I think there was something else that I had in mind, but it just escaped me. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the response. Before I give to the members, I'm going to start with Honorable Gunda. Then, before that, I'm just trying to. I just want to assure you that I'm going to start with you. But before that, from the department, maybe let me just check. Deputy Minister, when the acting DDG talked about the issue of the building, that now falls, you know, the allocation falls within the department. Does it mean that we are going to see some improvement? Because every time when you go to school, does this outside in the delay of, you know, when, like, for example, they're having problems with the buildings, sanitation, and then there's a delay. I want clarity on that every time it will be the issue of public works. Are you saying at least there's going to be improvement because education will be focusing on that? And the other thing I just want, like the Deputy Minister indicated, the issue of busing of children to school, the learner transport. I still feel that we are lagging behind, and I think we in the previous presentation, the meeting with the department, we did raise that there is no policy around the learner transport. Mm-hmm. That is why you find a situation where some provinces have started with this transport in 2007. No, recently we were in Limpopo, only to find that this program started last year, and they're only piloting 3 schools out of the whole province, of which, to me, you know, Limpopo is a rural area, and only schools, 3 schools have been accommodated around the issue of the learner transport. It's a challenge, really, something that we really have to deal with. And Deputy Minister, like you indicated when you talked about the hostels, we were in Nongoma. There are 2 hostels, which as the committee really we felt that the department is failing. Those is Kim Bekezulu School, High School, and Mokolodwa, I can't pronounce it properly. They've got hostels. And we felt that the hostel facilities are underutilized. And the other thing is the health risk to the learners who are staying there. And the other thing is the issue of high school fees that they are paying. I think it's something the department will really have to look into that and find out exactly what is happening. The conditions, the buildings there are very good, but they're not maintained, not properly cared for. I think there's something that we really have to do. I'm just going to hand over. Honorable Gunda, I'm going to start with you. Ranto, Honorable Mashamaite, and Honorable Pinky. In that request, can you start? Honorable De Villiers, thank you.
Thank you, Jinche. Ek gaan Afrikaans praat en ek gaan direk te vraag. Hey, it's not my problem. My eerste vraag aan die departement is goed en wel om die plan so uit te lê. In Rietfontein en die Kalahari is daar 'n skool wat hulle jaar lank nie interskole sport kon deel geneem het nie. Die departement is daar sy geld nie. In die selfde skool, die pos is nou nog nie gevul nie, is vir 'n jaar lank nie iemand om in die skool se biblioteek te werk nie. In die selfde skool, as daar computers, daar is nie onderwyser om die kinders te gebeur nie. That's the first three questions. The last question I would like to put to you is concerning your presentation. Let me go to that slide quickly. I've marked it. Okay, that question has been asked. Yes. All right, this one has also been asked. Where is the other one? Okay, here it is. On slide 15. Can you just clarify that first two sentences? Create a positive framework and maintain favorable conditions of service for educators. Just say to me in simple English, what do you mean by that? And the second one as well. Ensure effective professional leadership at district level of the system, because I've just heard you now saying some districts are not really up to do the things. Can you just clarify that to me? I thank you.
Chairperson, I've already said that I'm from Eastern Cape. It just gives an alarm to the Department of Education when you are coming from Eastern Cape. In 2007, I was a teacher. And the Department of Public Works then said to us when we asked for funds for the renovation of buildings, especially the sewage system of the school. The school is well built, but the sewage system is a disaster. As a result, the children are using the filth, an open space up until this moment. I know it. I'm from that area in Eastern Cape, Jamestown, next to Alwa North. That's 57 kilometers. They said the money is within the Department of Education then, so they are unable to do anything in the building of the school. Any renovations, nothing, it depends on the department. It's a surprise to me when the department says now, they are taking the budget, it's on their side. But the public works said it was on their side by that time. And also, in the budget of the Department of Education is good, and the Department of Education was delivering LTSM to the schools very smoothly in those areas, but it's like a dumping area. It looks like this new material is being dumped. The subject advisors that are within the district department, they're not doing any follow-ups. I'd love the department not to spend too much money in giving, but also in monitoring if the work is being done, especially on local levels. And also the third one is about the, I'm not sure about this one, but the great art teachers. When I was at school, I was employed part-timely on Saturdays by SENS in Pretoria to train the great art teachers and the pre-primary school teachers. I think for the department, if it's the department who gave them that work to do, or what is it called, the tender to do that, those people are very much educated, the sense people, and they are intellectuals. As a result, they are books. They are not competent to the educators of grade R and pre-primary school. I struggled with them for the whole year. As a result, the whole amount of money that was given to them, it just went, because all of them failed at the end of the year. That, I think, it's too difficult for them to learn out of those books. Can the department interact if it's still happening, the program is still happening? Can the department look and monitor what SENS is doing into the pre-primary school and the great art teachers? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Acting DG and Deputy Minister, do you know what was said by Honorable Rantro here, we pay for the services which have not been rendered or not the correct services. It's a wasteful and fruitless expenditure, or a fruitless and wasteful expenditure, something like that. I just wanted to make aware of that. My questions, Honorable Chair and Honorable Deputy Minister. My first question is, does the department have, you know, an operational plan which is quarterly based and budget attached, something like that. I am asking this question, Honorable Chair, because how the department is going to do a self-monitoring in terms of performance, even us as the committee, how are we going to monitor you? Because if you are going to do something for the whole year, your strategic plan is for a three-year document. In my understanding, it must have an operational plan, a yearly operational plan, which is quarterly, you know, target. It has got quarterly targets, but I think you show with us on that. My other question is, in relation with the subject advisor to educators at schools. During the beginning of this year, when we were visiting schools after the reopening, we, in my province, Limpopo, in my constituency area, I discovered that there is a resistance from the side of the teachers in terms of, you know, curriculum advisors. I've not been a teacher, but my understanding is that curriculum advisors go to schools and check whether teachers are doing the correct thing, isn't so? But there is a resistance on the side of teachers, particularly from the unions. I think the department must go and talk to SATU and other union teachers. My other question is in relation with the retention of school-based educators. Does the department have a retention strategy to ensure that indeed you retain the teachers, the retention is maintained. My last question, in other things you are saying you are going to develop and maintain norms and standards for educators and district support staff, just to check with the department, all along didn't you have these norms and standards if you are still going to develop them? Because if you are going to develop them for this financial year, when are you going to implement them? The implementation of that monetary standard. Can you share with the committee on those things? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chairperson. The first one is a follow-up on what the Deputy Minister has said in terms of the OSD. Last year we had, the commitment was that the money will be sought somewhere. The money will be sought somewhere else. And also owners were or are at provinces to look for that money. I'm not sure whether in this year's budget is there any consideration of, I know there's no new money, but I don't know how. Is there any consideration that we don't face a crisis of by June or whatever level that Labour saying we're not paid because provinces don't have that money of paying them in terms of the OSD? That's one. Two, I received, other time, I haven't sent it to you, I received a petition from the organization of the private schools, and they are complaining about the norms for funding private schools, alleging that they are not okay. But I'll give that petition to yourself so that you can be able to respond to them. They've gone to GDE Housing, they're not getting any assistance. The other one is on the strike plan. In the hard copy, you talk of the money that has been transferred to the public entities. However, we don't have the public entities' plans in terms of what is it that they're going to do with that money and how do you play then oversight over them in terms of whether they're enhancing, whether they're spending correctly or not. And then one would want to welcome the inroads that you are doing on Grade R educators. If you say educators that are in state schools, the state pays, welcome that. I'm also coming from Gauteng, where you find a school, state school, having two or three educators, but the state paying one educator and the rest paid by the SGB. And then find an anomaly that the one that is paid by state is paid 3,500. Mm. Pinky and Mashamaite, employed by the SGP, I'm paid 500 rands. Mm. After 2 months, I'm not paid. I'm paid after 6 months or that thing. With the non-availability of the bargaining councils for Grade R, then you have that problem because employer is an SGP where you can't go to each and every school and say service conditions of this. So that has to be looked into in terms of normalizing and also ensuring that there is stability and quality learning for all. In addition to what you have said about the farm schools, you said if we see learners on the street, we may phone QLTC or phone you direct, which we will do also in Gauteng. There are farms at Bronco Street and Kalina, where, like what we read in papers, the 14-year-old there, started working there at 14 years. That is a school-going boy. So we will do that when we see them in the farms and phone you that, yeah, these boys or these girls are not working, but they are working in the farms. Thank you.
Before I give over to the department to respond, I think one thing that I would like to check is that last year the department, when presenting to us, it indicates that very clear that in January when we do school visits, the toolkits will be available in all the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the schools that we went to, They by then they didn't receive those toolkits. And the other thing which is very interesting, Deputy Minister, is that when we were in Limpopo, we've taken people to Parliament. You know, sometimes the department becomes so excited, not being aware that they expose themselves. The very same toolkits that you are referring, that were supposed to be in the schools, were distributed there when we were at Parliament, at that program of taking people to Parliament. One asked herself, are you saying, is it safe to you that these packages are stored somewhere instead of being delivered to school. Maybe one would like to get that report and check what is happening in Limpopo in particular around that. Thank you. And you, I'm not answering.
Thank you. My question is in connection with textbooks. Now, the department spends a lot of money on providing textbooks to schools. But my experience is that that the school don't give the textbooks to the learners to take home. So I believe the textbook isn't such a golden item. That textbook is, they are given those textbooks for the learners to actually go and study or help them to complete their homework. That's my experience. Now, what is there any program to follow up, maybe from the department through provincial or otherwise, to follow that up, what's happening at school? And then the other concerning issue is we visited schools in KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo and also in the Western Cape. When you visit the disadvantaged schools, and you look at the gardening, the environment on the school grounds, then you will experience that there's nothing happening on that side. Now, I believe that what must happen is that we must actually concentrate on the school-friendly environment for the learners, because at home, there's a problem. Is there some allocation by the department to the schools to spend on that situation? Thank you.
If you give that your opportunity, I'm going to restrict you to one question.
Yes. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, thanks, Chair. I just forgot this question. Honourable de Villiers has just bring something to me. I just want to ask the department this question. And I'm glad that the Deputy Minister is here. The question I would like to put, I see in your strategic plan that you are serious about quality education. My question then is, why is it that in 15 years down the line, we don't, our children, previously disadvantaged schools, don't even have sports facilities?
Okay.
Didn't the department budget for that? What is the problem? Is there anything that the department can do about it? I thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, because of the time, and we have a little more than 10 minutes, we're going to go very quickly through the questions, and thank you very much to all the members for the questions that they've raised. Chair, you've raised the issues in Nongoma. It's a matter of concern. May I suggest that we would basically liaise with you, find out precisely the name of the school so that we could investigate. Mm-hmm. It cannot be correct that where the infrastructure is right, there is inadequate maintenance and the issues of health and safety are not particularly... That doesn't receive the attention of the Department of Education in KwaZulu-Natal. So what I would do, basically, is have my office liaise with you, get the information and make the appropriate intervention. So your concern is a very legitimate one, and thank you very much for that. Met betrekking tot Rietfontein, meneer, ek wil ook graag die naam van die skool hê, dan kan ons navraag doen en sien wat die rede is vir die vertraging. Daar moet verredeliking wees. Dit kan nie aanvaardbaar wees dat die skool sonder onderwyser vir so'n bepaalde tyd kan wees. Nie, so ons sal navraag doen en probeer vaststel wat die rede is. So ek hoop dit sal bydra tot die kwaliteit van die skool. So die tweede aspek van die krag was in Engels voorgeles, so ek sal het sommer in Engels doen. The issue about that you raised about what was it, was quality?
The last 15, I could deal with it. Yes.
You deal with that one there. So, Honourable Member Rantu, thank you very, very much. You know, the Eastern Cape, as you correctly indicated, has serious challenges because of its rural nature, because of the poverty index over there, and the enormous difficulties that our people face with regard to infrastructure, with regard to
traveling, transport, just name it, and you have difficulties. Firstly, let me say with regard to your approach or your understanding of development or training of practitioners. ECD, early childhood development, fell within and still falls within the purview of the Department of Social Development, which is a driver. These partners are Department of Health and Department of Education. I hold the view, and it's my personal view here, is that it should be located within Department of Education.
Yeah.
What we do help with is the curriculum content itself. The teachers, the practitioners that are being trained are trained and registered through different service providers are registered with the national through the National Qualification Framework with SAQWA, South African Qualifications Authority.
Mm-hmm.
What the result is, the Department of Education is not responsible for that registration process.
Okay.
It occurs independently of it. What the minister, what the acting DG, almost called minister, possible future minister, the future minister has indicated is that it is indeed a reality that the stipends in schools, in public schools, is better, as you correctly indicated, Comrade Pink, is than where there's a private practitioner or where the governing body is paying. But the reality is that there is no norm for what practitioners receive. They are not educators. They do not receive the benefits of educators. They merely receive a stipend. And I think the time has now arrived for us to reflect, having a conversation with all the provinces as to what would be the minimum threshold for a stipend and possibly a uniform stipend so that there isn't this unfair treatment of practitioners. That would also link with the kind of training that we should ensure, because training at a level, I mean, it has to be appropriate. It's got to be appropriate to the capacity and ability of those learners. With regard to the issues of public works, public works has always taken responsibility for our schools, for our courts, for correctional services facilities. It's historically so. Where you move out of that loop, as it were, is where you negotiate through Treasury to say, look, we have this desperate need, and this is what's happening with the Department of Education, to say our infrastructure backlog is more than 130 billion, in fact, it's about 140 billion. If we're going to go through public works, it's going to take so much longer. Can we set up, establish a partnership with the Development Bank of South Africa, take the money in advance, do it three times as quick with the support of the Treasury, and in consultation with public works, so it's not a problem at all, and we are able then to be able to provide these services much sooner rather than later. So we would actually receive the money, pay up front, and repay over a longer period of time. In that way there, we could indeed make a dent in terms of the infrastructure shortages, particularly in areas such as the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, etc. So I hope that would help with regard to that. Mr. Mashimaite, with regard to the operational plan, your budget basically is informed by the strategic plan of the Department of Education. The Public Finance Management Act says that every 3 months a report must be provided. Every select committee and every portfolio committee and standing committee has a right to engage with every single department in relation to the quarterly report. What Parliament is not doing, unfortunately, is not engaging with the departments. Select committees and portfolio committees have that responsibility, and in fact they should do so as part of their monitoring and evaluation responsibility. What I can say to you from the department, national department, we receive monthly reports on infrastructure, water, sanitation, building of additional classrooms, removal of unsafe structures, monthly reports. What we also received internally from the ministry is an internal report from the finance department regarding expenditure trends, as I've indicated earlier, from the provinces, so that we can then make the intervention. So we are doing whatever is necessary in terms of monitoring and evaluation, which is informed by the strategic plan of the various departments. Now, with regard to subject advisors, in fact, that deals with it's been raised by more than one. You see, the slide that you speak to speaks about uniformity and norms and standards. The norms, education is a concurrent competency. But if you go down to the Eastern Cape, you will find that they have a greater learner population than the Western Cape, but they have lesser, perhaps about a third, of the number of subject advisors than the Western Cape has. And you see that there is a link between success in the Western Cape and failure on the part of the Eastern Cape, simply because they don't have the support of subject advisors. We are saying that there should be norms and standards which determines at least how many subject advisors there should be in every district office. What is it that the district office should have? It should have ICT. what kind of skills are required over there and what kind of work must it be able to do in order to provide support to the schools. Now, we're in our third or the fourth version of it, and we've urged the provinces to now finalize, because there's nuances in the different provinces, to say that this must be finalized so that we can then publish the norms and standards and it can become a reality. If you take your expenditure on your district offices, you would find Gauteng spends about three times, or if not four times, the amount that Eastern Cape pays spends on your district offices. Now, that cannot be correct. So your norms and standards would then influence what the minimum allocation or a percentage allocation would be in relation to the expenditure on district offices, and that is why we are moving in that particular direction. With regard to the retention of educators, it's a question of incentives and rewards. I've indicated where special skills, rural allowances. These are attempts that we are trying to make. We are also examining the possibility. It's not a norm, it's not a standard, but for basically assisting educators in obtaining accommodation, especially in rural areas, because that's one of the challenges. Because there's no accommodation or decent accommodation, they travel from 100 to 150 kilometers daily to schools. They arrive late and they leave early. How do we deal with that particular reality in rural provinces such as Eastern Cape, Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, etc., and the north, northwest, where we are from, Comrade Rasmani, it is Rasmani, MEC. So that deals with that. Then the issue of from Honorable Nube, I'm just trying to see. The petition, you would provide us with the petition. Can I just tell you what the story, what is there? You have these private schools. Some of them are fly-by-night.
Yeah.
And we're saying that you can't get funding when you don't perform. If you're performing less than the national or at the very least the provincial average, surely you can't say to the Department of Education, listen, we've got a school year pay. We want to see that the remuneration you receive is linked to the performance. And they are unhappy. What the compromise that we've come to say, let's look, if we're not going to look at the national average, let's at least look at the provincial average.
Yeah.
So that you might find that if you are in Eastern Cape, you don't use a standard for the Western Cape. Because the challenges are much the same in the Eastern Cape. So at the very least, you must be able to achieve at the provincial level. Mm-hmm. Now, not to have any benchmarks there would simply mean that we are going to take money and resources, give it to these private schools, and they benefit from it. Just also to mention in passing, you know, the funding, Mr. Rasmain, you'd probably be very delighted to hear this. Previously, there was an unevenness in terms of the funding. Some provinces per learner would give 250, other provinces would give 350, others would give 550. Today, almost all provinces give more than 900 rands per learner. It's standardized. Now, it took a while because of the concurrent competency, but what we can celebrate now is that when the nine MECs sit with the ministry, we sit as one with a system of education to say what are our challenges. We don't say this province belongs to that party and this province belongs. It's one system of education, and the collaboration is just extremely wonderful. So that synergy has helped us in achieving these particular targets and goals. With regard to the toolkits, I apologize for that. What we do know is that that was the commitment that was given to us by the officials. But the reality is, because of the 11 languages in which they were published, there was a delay. And they extended the deadline from end of January to end of March. I would believe that by now all the provinces have received it. But I do think that the department, and I do so on behalf of the department, owes an apology to the public to say that you've made a commitment for end of January, you have not been able to fulfill it. So while certain provinces had received it earlier, other provinces had received it later, but from our last inquiry, it does appear as if all the provinces are now in possession of those resource kits. The issue of subject advisors and the monitoring and evaluation, your district officers have to monitor and evaluation that where there are resources that are sent to schools, that these resources are indeed utilized, and that the educators or the practitioners have the capacity to be able to utilize it. It doesn't make sense if you put the resources in schools and that doesn't happen. See, I've tried to be as quick as I could so that I could give my DG at least 2 or 3 minutes to round up. I'm not depriving his time for him, but thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm aware of time, so I'll just answer very briefly. Chair, the first question you posed deals with the problems we're confronting around rural schools and distances. And there, I mean, transport, scholar transport is a challenge which we're busy trying to deal with provinces, to try and balance where you place schools with distance from schools. The risk in provinces is multi-grade teaching, which we tried to do away with in the past. We're in a point now where we're saying, because of distance, we have to maybe accept multi-grade teaching and look at how we can deal with the curriculum issues. As far as hostels are concerned, there is a challenge. This is a problem which comes up that you've raised, and we believe through monitoring is something we've got to address. We're also trying a new approach, which Gauteng is starting, which is to say, let's not have school hostels only, but let's have a hostel which caters for a number of schools, so learners can come there and travel to the schools closer. So that's a new approach. Meneer Gunda, the adjunct minister at the eerste vraag geantwoord. En omdat die tweede vraag in Engels gevraagd was, zal ik in Engels antwoord.
Fine.
Okay. If you go to slide 15, you will see that create a positive framework and maintain favorable conditions of service for educators. That is essentially about saying, how do we create conditions that restore the dignity of teachers? OSD is doing that. But around issues of housing, around other things that raise the esteem of the profession, that's the first thing. Secondly, we say, if you look at rural areas, very often teachers want to go there. We've created an incentive for them to go there money-wise and salary-wise. But they can't find proper housing there. We're saying we provide good housing there. We won't have the problem of teachers coming in at 10 o'clock on Monday and leaving at 10 o'clock on Friday. So those kinds of conditions we're looking at, including housing subsidy and so forth. Then professional leadership at district level, you're right. The reason why we say we need to do this is precisely for the reason we're saying that there are districts which are not working. So that's why it's become an issue of consensus. Honorable Chairperson, the other questions have been answered on OSD. It is a big issue. Treasury has put money in. This was Honorable Mube. Treasury has put money in addition money. We still suspect there'll be some pressure at the provincial level, but that's something we'll be monitoring in detail. Overall, Honorable Chairperson, I think the key thing for us is that whether it's public workplace activity in provinces, it's about districts, it's about schools failing. The key thing for us is the issue of monitoring and evaluation. As far as sports is concerned, Honorable Member de Villiers, I think, asked that question. It is a problem. Sorry, was it? Honorable Gunda. Jammer, meneer. The issue of sports facilities has been a problem over years. It's a problem which clearly has been a budgetary issue for us over years. We're doing two things now, in terms of the infrastructure plan and in terms of our partnership with sports and recreation. We're trying to address that issue. From an infrastructure point of view, it's our issue. From an organizational point of view, above the school level, it's sports and recreation which comes in. We've done a few things already. We're finalizing a policy with sports and recreation. We're introducing it into the curriculum much more strongly. We're trying to address it through our infrastructure issue. But you're absolutely right. It is an area of neglect which has created a problem, which we are aware of, and incidentally, our Deputy Minister here is leading it. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Can I just deal with it very, very quickly? You know, you would see in the budget itself as an allocation for activity books. That there basically is a workbook that the child can take home, do the activity, can be assessed and marked. So that's the one part. The other part is we are now, for the first time again, all provinces have agreed that we have to have a national catalog for textbooks. So textbooks so that you don't have this discrepancy between provinces. And we could save as much as 50%. Our goal is towards ensuring that every child has a textbook. And the reason why the child doesn't take the textbook home is because it's shared by 3 and 4 children in a classroom.
Yeah.
So that is a huge disadvantage because of the limited resources. So there are two strategies. One is the workbook itself, which basically is an instrument for promoting literacy and numeracy. But more importantly, with regard to textbooks, that you would have a national catalog, and you would then basically have procurement taking place at the central level, so that the distribution dissemination can take place, and our calculations tell us that we would save at least 50% of what we are paying currently on textbooks, and that would be able to bring textbooks within the reach. So thank you for raising that, and you'd also have a better quality product as a result thereof. Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you, everybody. I think members, I know when it's education, this is the type of interaction that we get. The acting DCC is away. He has already got the experience with the minister. But let me just take this opportunity to thank the department, and we are looking forward for continuous interaction with the department. On now, I'm just going to excuse the department and request the members to stay behind for 2 to 5 minutes. I won't take long time.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, as we leave, may I send an invitation to you and your committee, whenever you are in the Gauteng area, to visit the Department of Education, because we've moved now from 1 to 3 Command Street to a new area, and 222 Steuben Street. I think you'd quite like the area. And you might want to have your next workshop at that particular facility.
Okay.
Thank
you. Thank you.
Oh, blue and blue.
Oh.
We get caught up in walking to the
look on that issue.
The high school I attended up until today, it is a mobile school in Uppington. Tell them near them.
No, we'll come with the infrastructure plan.
Thank you.
But unfortunately,
I'm checking if I must stay for the studio. So I should leave. Okay, thanks a lot.